ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Very big show we have for you today. I'll be joined by Matt Forney pretty much right off the bat, as soon as we're done with the Daily Dispatch. We'll welcome him into the studio. We'll talk about mostly the takeover of American industry by hostile foreigners that are here on fraudulent visas. A lot of them from India. The big story today, most of the big stories today come out of Davos, the World Economic Forum, where they are meeting. And as we described yesterday, in accordance to the lockstep document, they are trying to set the groundwork, build the foundations for a new world order, since their plans for total centralized control of the entire world is ran into a major roadblock. That is us. That is Donald Trump and the movement he represents. And so now they're changing their tactics because they are, after all, only human, and they have to contend with human will, and we are that will. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Tuesday, the 20th of January, 2026. Israeli forces mass around Church of the Nativity, intimidating Bethlehem Christians. Late last night, Sunday, January 19th, 2 days ago, Israeli military forces were observed gathering in and around the Church of Nativity and Manger Square in Bethlehem in the occupied West Bank. According to eyewitnesses and local sources, residents reported a heavy military presence, including armed patrols, vehicles, troop concentrations in the immediate vicinity of the church complex and surrounding streets. And videos of this have just been released. This, of course, is in line with what we've been reporting on, like the fact that Israel is at this point trying to annex the Shepherd's Field, where the shepherds were alerted by an angel that Jesus was born. Major moves in the West Bank there as Israel attempts to widen its territory. Meanwhile, Palantir CEO says AI to make large-scale immigration obsolete. Oh, well, good thing we destroyed our countries for it then. Well, that's not going to bite us in the ass, right? I mean, we imported tens of millions, or I guess in total, hundreds of millions of hostile foreigners into Western Europe and America. Of course, the claim that it was going to, you know, fill out the pension funds was always ridiculous on the face of it. But now we have AI, and so I guess it was all unnecessary. So I guess we'll ask them politely to go home, and I'm sure they will. Meanwhile, manhunt for suspect who shot two Portland police officers during Antifa action at ICE facility. Authorities are searching for a suspect who shot two law enforcement officers in Oregon on Monday evening. The Portland Police Department was alerted about an armed man issuing a threat in the Sullivan's Gulch neighborhood. Responding officers encountered a white male in his mid-30s who opened fire on them. Two officers were rushed to the local hospital and are now in stable condition, PPD explained in a press release, which included images of that suspect. I had to guess. I would suggest he's probably hanging around the ICE facility, if I had to guess. Meanwhile, Besant says mainstream media is causing hysteria over Greenland and is downplaying the Treasury dumping threat. The story at InfoWars.com. Asian and European stocks, along with U.S. equity index futures, are deeply in the red this morning as tensions between President Trump and Europe intensify over Greenland. And we'll return to this in a little bit, but something's going on with Greenland. I mean, it was like kind of like a meme at the beginning of Trump's administration. Here we are exactly 1 year in, and like crazy things are happening over Greenland. I mean, Europe is talking about selling off a bunch of American assets in an attempt to essentially destroy the dollar over what's happening with Greenland. This kind of came out of nowhere, but it's having major geopolitical consequences. I think I may have some sort of answer as to why that is. We'll return to that in just a little bit. It is about national security. Mostly it's about AI. Finally, we have this. U.S. airstrike kills al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorist linked to ISIS gunmen who killed two U.S. soldiers and an interpreter in Syria. So Syria will be another big topic of conversation today as things are getting crazy there, courtesy of the CIA-backed Islamic dictator terrorist Joe Lani. That's your Daily Dispatch. Matt Forney joins me on the other side of this short commercial break. Go to thealexjonesstore.com and get a really cool hat. Any order, you get a free hat, this InfoWars hat, which I should probably wear. I need a haircut. Maybe I'll just wear a hat the whole show. Will we sell more of them that way? Stay tuned.
G-Man, all the free-flowing methylene blue is now mine!
No way, you evil scum. Methylene blue is for everyone.
Order Methylene Blue at the AlexJonesStore.com.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at the AlexJonesStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio now by Matt Forney. You can follow him on X at Matt Forney. That's at M-A-T-T-F-O-R-N-E-Y. He's a writer, editor, and investigative journalist originally from Syracuse, New York, now based in New York City. He authors the Substack publication, The Visa Files, where he delivers in-depth reporting on H-1B visa abuse, Indian ethnic nepotism in tech and corporate workplaces, offshoring, and related issues impacting American workers. Matt, welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on, Harrison.
My pleasure. And, of course, mattforney.com can get you all your information, all your media, your Substack, and everything. You do a lot of great work on X. I'm sure people will recognize you from that. And, of course, is it a coincidence now, or why is it that Indian especially, but in general, ethnic nepotistic networks are in the news so much these days?
Well, they're just getting exposed. There's just such a critical mass of foreigners and exploited people here in the U.S. that you can't ignore it anymore. I've joked to friends that a lot of like weird behavior that Indians engage in was totally unknown 5 years ago. You would have only known about it if you were, you know, an expat or had been to India. Now they're everywhere, and you can't ignore what's in front of our own eyes.
Yeah, and you know, the sheer number of Indian people, I think, is like daunting. Like, people don't respect how many Indians there are in India, let alone the rest of the world. You know, I think it's 1.4 billion is the official count now, which means every single person in America of every race, as is the color, creed, whatever, every single American citizen could be replaced with an Indian. There'd still be a billion Indians in India waiting to get over.
Yeah, there's about 330 Americans according to the last census. You know, if India could send 500 million people, and they'd still have like another billion to go.
They'd still be overcrowded.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's like, do people not recognize that? Like, there is no limit where it'll be like, okay, all of the Indians that wanted to come here are here. We're done now. I mean, it is an endless source of population. Why would we be opening our gates? Because Western Europe's doing it too. I got a video, maybe we can go to it in a little bit, at the World Economic Forum now. Ursula von der Leyen basically saying, Europe's opening up its doors to India too.
Every country is doing this. Like, Russia's bringing them in. It's everywhere. And again, like, the quality of life in India is so poor that, like, even as degraded as America is right now, it's still a better prospect. There's never going to be a stop to the number of people who want to come in. And we can't fit all these people, okay? We're in a state where we can barely take care of Americans.
So how did this happen? Like, how did it happen so quickly, and how have we not stopped it? You know, we just sort of accept, you know, I'm 36, like, we grew up in a world that was, for all intents and purposes, multicultural, especially on TV and stuff. But I remember going back and watching videos from like 1990, and stand-up comedians like Jay Leno are going, have you seen this, an Indian owning a gas station? Have you seen this? Like, it was like new. It was like something people were joking about in the late 80s and 90s, is the idea of the Indian guy owning the gas station. Now, every gas station in America is owned by an Indian mafia, basically.
Yeah, we're about the same age. I'm 37. So yeah. I remember growing up in the 90s, and again, like, you knew maybe one or two Indian people. There's like, an Indian kid in your class, and again, the gas station. But now, like, everywhere, like, I live in, I came back to the U.S. from, living abroad for several years, and like every small town, upstate New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, everywhere I go, it's Indians. Indians right in the gas station, Indians at Costco. That's a thing I got to experience recently.
Yeah.
It's a complete, it's gotten to the point again where we cannot ignore this, Americans. It's just everywhere.
Yeah, it is. So how did it get like that? Cause again, it's not, I don't have anything against Indian people personally. I'm friends with a bunch of Indian people, but doesn't mean I want to give up my country to them. And it's not like this is happening because we don't have people and we're desperate for a population and they're willing to volunteer for us. I mean, this is a scam. This is scam upon scam that's being run against us.
Well, this has been going on at some level since the early 90s, but it seems to have really exploded under the Biden administration. A lot of what's happening is that the Indian government conditions trade agreements on bringing, allowing their citizens to migrate to these countries. They impose this on everyone. The U.S., Russia, the European Union, Canada, Australia, and that is a big reason why there are so many Indians here now.
Because it's actually in cooperation with the Indian government, who's using their role in trade disputes or multilateral agreements to get these concessions. And the people, I mean, do they really even need to do that? Because I'm sure, I don't think they're having to twist the arms of the Americans or the Western
Europeans. No. They've got, there's a lot of corporations that like this cheap labor. And of course, there's, the vote issue. Like 61% of Indian Americans voted for Kamala Harris in the 2024 election. Those are factors as well. But the Indian government is pushing it in an organized way. Other countries do this, but like India is so prevalent in this simply because there's way more Indians and the government is way more organized in pushing this.
And then they're organized when they're here too, right? I mean, it's not just, it's a cross-cultural exploitation that's going on. There's the Indians here. They're working hand in glove with the Indians back in India.
Oh yeah. There's all kinds of organizations such as the Hindu American Foundation has been accused of being a front for the Indian government, and there are also attempts to, in Georgia, there's an attempt to make Hindu phobia a crime that can be prosecuted as a hate crime. Oh, not that they say Indians, they don't say Indians, they say Hindus. There's a massive Hindutva, which is a radical form of Indian nationalism pushed by the Modi government, is a big motivator for this mass migration.
Interesting. And nowhere is escaping it. Obviously, Canada is like an Indian province now. And as shameful as it is, Texas is like a hotspot for the Indian invasion.
Yeah. I cover a lot of stories out of Texas. Most recently, I was reporting on how Indians have taken over the IT department at the employee retirement system. For those of you not in Texas, that's responsible for managing the retirement payouts of civil servants. I was told by an insider that unqualified Indians are coming in. It's the usual pattern. What happens is an Indian will get into a position of power, hiring manager, CTO or whatever, and then suddenly everyone below them will become Indian because they only hire their own. This has happened across so many corporations, and now it's happening at both state and local government, particularly here in Texas.
Yeah, and again, why is Texas the hotspot? Do you have any idea?
Governor Greg Abbott has been very close with India in terms of bringing them over. There's a lot of tech companies here, particularly a lot of ones that have moved from California. Austin's a tech hub, Dallas is a tech hub. That is, I believe, the main motivator. The government here actively encourages this. Obviously, it's happening everywhere. North Carolina is another major hotspot, Georgia, but again, when you have the state government supporting it, you have so many more people coming in.
And do you have the same level of fraud with the Indians that you do with the Somalis? Because, again, it's not a matter of and we talked about this actually in a you're doing a new show called the Matt Forney Show that I don't know if you want to get into. It's not out yet, but
soon.
Maybe we can get some details on that. But we pre-recorded an episode and we were talking about that. The whole scam, the whole fraud, diversity scam that's happening. And, one of the things that I like to point out is, there's not a big problem with theft in the Somali community. They don't steal from one another. A lot of times they'll leave their doors unlocked and they're all going in and out of each other's houses. It's total trust, no theft at all, because it's not like these people are just, genetically disposed to stealing things. it's a collective action of one group stealing from another group.
Yes.
When they do these scams.
They steal from people they perceive as outsiders.
Right.
This happens with Indians as well. The Indian fraud is way, way bigger than the Somali fraud, and it's everywhere. The reason the Somalis got popped is because, well, there's been a lot of attention on them recently, but also, we saw all the memes, you know, the Quality Learning Center, mm-hmm. Blatant, you know, daycares that had nobody there, shut down in the middle of the day. That, again, was something that you could not ignore at all levels, whereas Indians have way more sophisticated fraud schemes. One of the most popular ones is there will be 50 or so body shops, which are just firms that contract Indians out to various corporations for IT roles, headquartered at one address. Right. I recently investigated a few of these in New Jersey. You'll see like 50 body shops headquartered in one corporate suite in Islin or Princeton or wherever. Nobody's there. They're not even listed on the directory or on the entrance. And if you ask people in the building, other tenants, like, oh, I'm looking for, I don't know, Alpha Tech or whatever it's called, they won't even know. They don't even know it's there. They're like, are you in the right building, sir?
Right. Because it's not a real business. It's like a front. It's an operation. It's a scam, right? Explain how the body shops work exactly.
Essentially, the body shops are one of the primary means of bringing in Indians into this country through fraud. They have their own departments back in India. They will contract out in bulk contracts to various corporations. Pretty much any corporation you can think of is enrolled with body shops. They work for far less. The body shops themselves get a kickback for everyone they bring in. And again, the bulk contracts are where they will sign put more labor to these corporations than is actually necessary for the job. The USAA, which is headquartered down in San Antonio, has been a major, I don't want to say victim, but like a major place where this is going on. That I was told by insiders that because of these bulk contracts, they bring in way too many Indians, more than necessary for the job. So they'll have these Indians just sitting around doing nothing or doing make-work jobs, the equivalent of, you know, digging a hole and then filling it back in again. They can't dismiss them because that would invalidate the entire contract.
Oh, interesting. So they have to keep all of them. And then because what I thought you were going to say is they can't invalidate it or they can't, you know, say there's no job because else they'll get sent back to India. So
that's another major factor,
right,
as well.
Right.
But from the corporation's perspective, these and all of them operate on bulk contracts. It's never like one Indian or two Indian. It's like 500 or 400, et cetera.
Right.
And maybe 100 out of those will actually be doing anything useful.
And, of course, we've talked a lot in the last year or so about the way the H-1B visa scam is just – it's a scam. I mean, the whole thing is a scam from top to bottom in the sense that, you know, the companies will technically fulfill what they're obligated to do in terms of advertising. You know, we have a position open, but they'll do it in a way that is deliberately designed so that nobody applies. So they can then go, hey, nobody applied to this job. We have to go to India to get it.
Yeah, what they do is that they will they're legally required to solicit, put at job ads out, and they can only bring in the H-1Bs or other people on visas if no Americans apply.
Right.
So what they will do is they do the bare minimum. They'll put an ad in the Sunday paper of wherever it is. And who reads the paper? I have not read a physical paper in maybe 10 years. So you can claim, oh, no one applied for this job, that we made it deliberately difficult to access. So, you know, we need the Indians now. We need foreigners. I've seen examples from Connecticut newspapers, the San Francisco Chronicle. Even in the case of the San Francisco Chronicle ads for tech positions at Volkswagen and wherever, they will say in the ad, mail your resume. Physically mail your resume like it's 1985. No,
yeah,
email, nothing.
Fax your resume
on the website.
Wow. Yeah, because they don't want people to apply. They don't want Americans to apply. They want to be able to say, we have to go to India. Because the way these laws were written, it's not supposed to be replacing American workers. It's supposed to be if you're, you know, an engineering company and you're trying to achieve things and you're, you know, a crucial part of the American economy, you can't be held up because America's not producing enough engineers. Get the engineers from overseas. But it's supposed to be only when our resources have been exhausted.
Yeah, the ostensible purpose of the H-1B visa was to plug existing gaps in the American labor force. It was not meant to, like you said, replace it wholesale. That's what it's being used for now. And we're in a situation where, like, tons of new STEM graduates, guys, Americans in engineering and whatnot, cannot find work. And it's gotten to the point where if you major in STEM, you're more likely to be unemployed than someone with a useless liberal arts major.
Right. I think I just read that. I think I'm not sure if it was STEM or not, but it was, you know, basically the latest is saying you're just as likely to be unemployed if you have a college degree or if you don't.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we had boomers saying like 20 years ago, well, you should have majored in something useful. Major in STEM. STEM is useful. And now it's arguably less useful than a liberal arts degree.
Right, because they'll just get somebody from overseas. And in India, we know they don't exactly have the same moral compunctions that we do, especially when it comes to things like cheating, right? I mean, cheating is rampant there. To the point that it's like industrialized.
There is so much fraud going on. You can assume that, you know, 9 out of 10 Indians who apply for a job, their education will be fake. They can outright buy their degrees, or I have some personal experience with this. There's been an entire, industry of college ghostwriters who will, do work for college students for money. Indians, foreigners in general are massive users of this. Not just Indians, but also Chinese, Arabs, Africans. In many cases, the clients can barely speak English. And an explosion of it used to be slanted more towards the Chinese, but ever since, say, the Canadians started bringing in tons of Indian students at colleges like Conestoga, there are so many Indians just using these services. I believe ChatGPT has depressed it a bit, but like that industry still exists. There are even cases where if an Indian has a video interview and you know they're not qualified for the job because all their credentials are faked, they are services where they will hire another Indian who looks like them to conduct the video interview.
That's wild.
It's insane. It's scam upon scam upon scam. The average American can't even conceive of it. It's just a Matryoshka doll of scams all the way down with Indians.
Yeah, and it seems like it happened so quietly and for so long that it's almost like by the time we realize the issue, by the time the wider public realized the issue, it almost seems like it's too late. There's 10 million of them here and they're embedded and they have, you know, political offices. Why did this happen so quietly? Like, why is it just now that everybody is suddenly looking around going, what the hell are we doing?
Well, like I said, a lot of them seem to have come in under the Biden administration because, you know, I left America in 2017, came back last year. There were not nearly as many Indians around everywhere. They certainly weren't in places like Middletown, New York or Poughkeepsie or wherever. What I see happening is again, it's gotten to the point where nobody can really ignore it. And actually, I got a report from an insider at Cognizant, which is a major body shop. These body shops do occasionally hire Americans, but they only do so if that American has specialized knowledge that they basically want to train their Indians in, and then they get rid of the Americans or the Canadians or wherever. Cognizant, according to this report, after Biden was declared the winner in the 2020 election, they fired all of their senior American staffers. That seems to have been like the linchpin point where everything just became Indian. And what a lot of corporations are doing now is because of the restrictions that Trump has imposed on H-1Bs, they're going to try and move offshore the jobs to India themselves using what are called global capability centers. Home Depot has them. You know, Google's building one. Microsoft is building one. So if they can't bring, the Indians here, they're just going to take the jobs out of America and put them in India.
Right. It seems like we're getting hit with the 1-2 punch. All of our manufacturing is being outsourced and we're bringing in millions of people to take our jobs.
Yeah, they're stealing everything that isn't nailed down and they're pulling the nails up of what is nailed down, stealing that too.
Right. And this is your latest from thevisafiles.substack.com, Matt Forney's Substack. The Indian invasion seizing Texas government from within, from fraudulent hires to rigged votes, the hidden threat to the Lone Star State. It's really not that hidden, but it's, you know, it's weird because it's one of these things that you go to some of these newly built subdivisions just outside of Austin and it's 10,000 homes as far as the eye can see, sort of cookie cutter, you know, neighborhoods being built. And every single home is owned by an Indian. I mean, we're being colonized.
Yeah, I mean, I've only been here for a few days, but like I've seen that, you know, continuously. It's just Indians, different Indians. It's almost to the point where it seems like Texas, you know, has more non-whites per capita than a place like New York City, that was traditionally an immigrant destination.
Right. Well, you know, white people are an absolute minority in Texas now. We are not the majority by any definition. If anybody takes that, it's the Hispanic people. So yeah, again, we're getting hit from every level here. And it seems like it happened quietly, sort of behind the scenes, just, you know, start out with like your Apu-like character. And now it's just like Indians literally everywhere. And if you try to stop it, Indian mafias will like get your account, banned. So that part, it seems like a lot of people woke up to this threat and now there's like a battle over it. And for the last year, It really started last Christmas with the Christmas before last with Elon.
The Christmas crash out.
The great Christmas crash out of 2024 it would have been. Yeah, so now everybody's looking at it. So what is the Indian community, the Indian mafia doing to try to either weather this storm or fight back?
They are, as you said, harassing their critics online. You know, they try to get them banned off of X. They've got whole Telegram groups dedicated to this. I have heard from other journalists that they will try and physically stalk, journalists who are covering this. They will try to, because they're Indians in every, you know, corporation. They will try to mess with your bank accounts. They'll try to mess with your, you know, car insurance or whatever. And they've also ramped up their lobbying. You know, Amanda Barolata at WND has done a lot of, good reporting on, various, unregistered, agents of the Indian government that are trying to embed themselves in the Trump administration. And of course, you've got, like say the Georgia law that's trying to make Hindophobia a hate crime. Also around that same time in California, there was an attempt to, I forget the name of the law, but there was a law that would have, made, transnational repression a serious crime in California law. And this was perceived as being targeted as Indians, because primarily Indians, the Indian government will straight up assassinate political enemies, their own political, domestic political enemies on American and Canadian soil. There was a case about 3 years ago of a Sikh leader in Canada who was assassinated by agents of the Indian government, which famously led to Trudeau, you know, growing a bit of spine and expelling some Indian diplomats. There's a case going on in New York City right now of an attempted assassination on a Sikh leader by an agent of the Indian government. And it's actually funny because his lawyer tried to get his connections to the Indian government, just, you know, exclude that from evidence in the trial. And the judge said, nah. So they do stuff like that. But going back to that California law, Gavin Newsom vetoed it because he – I forgot what his reasoning was, but he's another politician who's completely in the pocket of the Indian lobby. Yeah. These are the things that they are trying to do. They're trying to entrench their perceived dominance in American law after taking over corporations. They would ideally, if they can, make criticizing them a crime.
Yeah, and you know, it's a popular thing to do these days, I guess, if you're a an ethnic group trying to take advantage of America. You don't want people criticizing you, so you want to make that illegal. It just seems so weird that it's India. I don't know. I personally have this perception of India as like, you know, whatever, the Beatles went there and learned how to play sitar, you know, and it's just like why are they so militant? Like, they seem to be just as, like, militant and aggressive as any Muslim population or Jewish population. Or, I mean, they really are a cohesive and aggressive population, the Indians.
I'm a lot of this started when Narendra Modi became the president of India. I believe that was in the early 2010s. He is the one who's been pushing this aggressive immigration to other countries and the aggressive as a form of Indian nationalism. Again, the term they use for it is Hindutva. They are he sees it as a sort of conquest project because if India went into a hot war with the United States or any first world country, they would lose. They would lose. We've seen the if you've seen the ridiculous chances they do.
I think the border
with Pakistan.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they're kicking up as high as they can. They wouldn't win a hot war. So they're trying to conquer countries from within through mass immigration, taking control of key industries, including in national security. I've covered the infiltration at places like Boeing and Iron Mountain. And the thing is, like, in many ways, this is a bigger threat than, say, illegal immigration. Because,
right.
Like, okay, that's bad and we should get them all out. But, like, say, the primary occupation of, like, illegal aliens from South, Central America or whatever, you know, they're in menial, unskilled positions. Whereas Indians, you know, they're working at banks. They're working at, you know, defense contractors.
They're the CEO of, like, every big tech company. You know, we're getting hit from both sides, on top and on bottom. We'll be back with Matt Forney on the other side. A quick commercial break, and then we'll return to the topic and what we can do to fight back. I'll show you some clips from the World Economic Forum meeting in Davos where basically, their plan is to replace white people with Indians, and we'll figure out why that is. Stay tuned.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it. came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalists. Get ultra methylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
You're seeing it, folks. You're witnessing the birth of a superpower. The rise of the superior race, the Indians. Are you feeling scared yet? Now just imagine 10 billion of these guys jumping around for whatever reason. What are they doing? What are they doing, the world asks. Why are they all jumping in a synchronized fashion? Why does this look like a Bollywood production? And how is it that we're losing to these people? It feels like we're losing to these people somehow. I don't understand how that is. That video went viral today. Just one of many of the Indian military doing things in a way that just beggars belief. But what are they doing? Why are they doing it this way? It's always the question asked. You ever see the motorcycle parade?
Oh, yeah.
They did?
Yeah.
Total classic. We should bring that video in. My guest is Matt Forney. You can follow him on X at Matt Forney. That's M-A-T-T-F-O-R-N-E-Y, mattforney.com. is also where you can find his work, and he has a Substack. And what's the name of your Substack one more time?
The Visa Files.
TheVisaFiles.substack.com. And we're talking about India, and we're talking about Indians, and the infinite supply of them that apparently every Western country is just desperate to get their hands on. We have this video from Ursula von der Leyen. This is from earlier today at the WEF Davos meeting. Clip number 14, Ursula von der Leyen says the EU is on the cusp of making, quote, the mother of all deals with India. Isn't that exciting, Matt? Aren't you excited to hear about the mother of all deals?
I'm excited. I'm as excited as I would be for a gun pointer to my head.
That's pretty much what she's describing. Let's go to clip number 14 now.
And right after Davos, the next weekend, I will travel to India. There's still work to do, but we are on the cusp of a historic trade agreement. Indeed, some call it the mother of all deals. One that would create a market of 2 billion people, accounting for almost a quarter of global GDP. And crucially, that would provide a first mover advantage for Europe with one of the world's fastest growing and most dynamic continents. Europe wants to do business with the growth centers of today and the economic powerhouses of this century, from Latin America to the Indo-Pacific and far beyond. Europe will always choose the world, and the world is ready to choose Europe.
And then a smattering of applause there. It just reminds me, as you point out, Russia just made a deal with India to bring in a bunch of people. Finland, of all places, is like, we're bringing in 200,000 Indians for some reason. Again, what is the rationale behind this?
Well, another rationale beyond the ones we've already discussed. Well, first off, I have to point out that woman looks and sounds like a villain from Mary Poppins.
Yeah,
and right after Davos.
But yeah, another thing that an excuse is that the birth rates in Western countries are too low.
Of course,
we don't have enough of a labor force because nobody's having kids. We need to bring in immigration. I've heard that from so many people. I've heard that from so-called libertarians who support open borders, the left, corporate leaders, etc. That's just another excuse. Which the whole AI revolution was supposed to solve that by like just automating everything. But again, you know, the joke of on X now is that AI just stands for another Indian. Like, if you remember those, if you ever been to one of those Amazon, self-checkout things where like the cameras supposedly see what you're picking up and they just charge you when you leave.
I've heard of it.
There's actually a Starbucks in Midtown Manhattan that still does that. But like, as it turns out, it wasn't AI. It's a bunch of Indians watching the camera and just pressing buttons.
What the heck? Well, and it's like that video that, here's the, just strike fear into the heart of Western nations. I mean, try to get away from that guy. He's got 360 degree optical cover. As long as the guy underneath keeps spinning him. I mean, the whole thing is just absurd. What were we talking about? Sorry. Every time I see this video, it somehow wipes my brain, and I just have to watch it for a very long time. The whole thing's absurd.
And we're talking about birth rates, AI, and, you know, the bogus claim that AI is taking away jobs. They're just going to Indians instead.
No, and I don't know. The whole thing's absurd. And there's the video recently of the hotel lobby where instead of having somebody there to greet you in the lobby, it's a video of some Indian dude like at home, but he's there video conferencing to sign you into your hotel.
To be fair, that was just a test, but like, I guarantee you they'll try and roll that out like nationwide.
I'm sure they will. And it's just like, but why? What is it just because they can pay them so little? Is it really just about scrape? And cause here's the thing. We're getting hit on so many different ways. There's the illegal immigration everybody knows about. This isn't illegal. This is technically legal immigration because they're scamming it. You've got the Indians here that are operating in a mafia network and they're, inclined to give jobs to their ethnic cohort. But then there's also the Americans that are selling us out to India. They're the American CEOs that are happy to offshore manufacturing or bring in, 10 million people. So like, why is that? I get why Indians would want to hire other Indians. Why is Ursula von der Leyen so excited?
Well, simply because, I think there's just a part of it is an anti-white mentality. Part of it is, I think at least in the U.S., there's a lot of people on the right who still have this image of Indians as being hardworking, you know, smart, intelligent immigrants. It's like they've turned against, illegal immigration, but from Central America, Somalis, obviously. But they still think of Indians as being like, you know, they still have that image from like 20, 30 years ago of like Apu and the gas station.
Right.
Which is
so funny because the left freaked out at that, and there was the big cancel culture event where they...
Yeah, there was a whole documentary about it, the problem with Apu.
The problem with Apu, right. And so they get rid of Apu and claim that he's a damaging, you know, Indian stereotype. And as soon as he's out of the way, the reality about India comes rushing in. And, God, we wish they were like Apu. I mean, again, no offense to Indians, but my God, I've seen some documentaries about that place. And again, it's one of these ironies where the left apparently loves India, corporations love India, and like you're talking about a culture that was burning their wives when their husbands died up until the British came and forced them to stop doing that. It's like this is not a progressive, like forward-thinking culture that you're bringing in. It's very barbaric in a lot of ways.
Yeah. A lot of it comes just kind of down to our different perceptions of morality, us versus the third world. Yeah. There's the we generally, Westerners interpret morality through guilt-based,
right.
Whereas the third world tends to be very shame-based. Guilt-based that comes from Christianity. The idea of behind guilt, they're not the same thing. Guilt and shame. The idea behind guilt is that you know you have done something wrong. The idea behind shame is that you are wrong. Shame is more focused on image. That's where you get to varying degrees. Like you have a face culture in places like China and Japan. You have honor killings in the Muslim world. You had blood feuds in Albania. I lived in Albania for a while. And in India, it manifests the term that was famously goes around is izzat. Basically, izzat basically reduces life down to a win or a zero-sum game. If you're not winning, you're losing. Goal in a culture like that is to screw people over before they screw you over. And if you're in India, I can't really fault anyone for thinking like that. If you're in a culture where everyone is scamming everyone else, you have to scam back. You have to adapt. The problem is when they come over in massive amounts and apply that thinking to our society.
100%. And I know our regular audience is hearing my internal monologue right now because I repeat this over and over because I think people don't understand what we're losing fundamentally when we talk about becoming a third world nation or going more towards, you know, the third world nation. It starts a snowball effect that is really impossible to interrupt because people start scamming, other people start scamming. Suddenly the scam gets so big that if you're not scamming, you're going to lose. So then you have to scam. And once that feedback loop gets in motion, it's really hard to interrupt.
Yeah, I lived in Mexico for 4 years, and Mexico is not nearly as bad as India, but you still have a lot of this third world, morality culture. In Mexico, I lived in a very nice neighborhood in Guadalajara, like the equivalent of a nice part of Brooklyn.
Right.
I still have bars on the windows of my apartment, even on the back, which is completely sealed off from like the outside in case, I guess, ninjas try to do a home invasion.
Right.
if you have a utility bill, they don't send it in the mail. They will send someone physically to post it on your door because so many Mexicans, just if they were sent for the mail, they just like, oh, I never got the bill. When it comes to, anything like, 7-Elevens that are open 24/7 will shut down will close the door at 11 p.m. and you have to order through the window. Stuff like that to get around the fact that it's a high crime society, a low trust society. That mentality is coming to America. I've seen it everywhere. I mean, you can walk into a Walgreens or wherever and like everything is locked down.
Yep.
You have to ask a clerk to open it up. Stuff like that. One of my friends was talking about how, Panera Bread, had the unlimited Sips Club, and for the longest time you could just walk in if you were a member, grab a cup and just fill up, you know, operate on the honor system. But too many people were taking advantage of it for free, so now you have to ask, ring it up and get it from the clerk.
It's the classic, it's the phrase, this is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have liberty, because immoral people take advantage of the vulnerabilities that are necessary in a free system. We are literally losing civilization itself. We are losing something that it took our ancestors 2,000 years to build brick by brick. It's being smashed with a giant hammer called India and Mexico and the rest of the third world. And again, it's not even like like they would be insulted by this. The thing I reference all the time is the video of the Indian politician driving around throwing money out of his car, throwing cash out of his car. And he's not ashamed about that. It's not – he doesn't think of it as violating this, you know, a sacred voting system. It's like, no, you give money to people, they vote for you. That's how it works.
That's just Tuesday over there.
Yeah, so they bring that over and, you know, act outraged. And we're like, no, you're supposed to vote on your conscience. It's incompatible.
I've heard reports of like Indians that will get hired in the U.S. by an American, and Indians think they have to tithe part of their salary to the person that hired them, because that's how Indians work. And then they're shocked when like Americans don't do that, because that's not how we operate here.
Right. And of course that's how the body shops operate too, right? They're getting a cut of everybody's salary as soon as they're here.
Yeah, I reported recently on a huge alleged kickback scheme at Capital One, where a bunch of body shops were deliberately promoting unqualified people and getting kickbacks. And another thing with the body shops is that like it's not there's what will happen is a big body shops like Cognizant will often push their contracts down to smaller unknown body shops. So the actual people who end up at the corporation could be five or six levels removed from the body shop that actually signed the contract with the corporation. It's just one level of massive level of kickbacks and fraud.
So they're making money. The body shop's making money. The Indian government likes this because they get, you know, repatriation of money and all this other
remittances,
stuff.
Remittances
is the word I'm thinking. Thank you. Everybody's benefiting except for the American people. We're getting screwed over constantly in ways that I don't even think we can quantify or understand. And it's kind of a meme at this point, but anytime the Verizon network goes down, Microsoft is having some major glitch in their system. It's everybody, you know, posting, hey, look, you know, you replaced all your engineers with Indians a year ago. Maybe that's why your company is collapsing.
They've replaced customer service of Indians. Like a decade ago, yeah, you could call your bank if you had an issue and it would be resolved. Unless it was something serious, it could be resolved in 5 minutes. You're talking to an American. But now, like, I've had to, call my bank ever since coming back to the States for various things. I'll get on the line with an Indian who's clearly in India. You can hear people muttering in Indian languages in the background. And she will take a half hour to fix, say, like a false fraud alert on my debit card, because she keeps going back and like, sorry, sir, I need to speak to my manager, puts me on hold, comes back. Sorry, I need to speak more with my manager. This is a problem that should not take this long to solve. But this is the same thing that's happening everywhere and across every industry. Americans' quality of life is just going down the drain because of this mass immigration.
100%. And I always think about that in terms of like, it's hard enough for me to order from Taco Bell if the person doesn't speak English well. How are you designing complicated, sophisticated engineering systems if you can't communicate? I mean, you know, I go to Taco Bell, I'm like, I want a quesadilla, but I want a chicken instead of steak. And it's like, okay, you said quesadilla, and it's just like, oh my God, what should take 2 seconds instead takes 5 minutes, and then it's the order's wrong anyway, and then I'm like, how is Amazon doing this? How is Apple dealing with like sophisticated, complicated issues? Everything. It's just like throwing sand instead of grease into an engine.
Yeah, a lot of tech workers will report to me, like across every industry, when Indians come into their teams, the Indians oftentimes cannot speak comprehensible English. I mean, they're unqualified in every other respect, but they can't even communicate. So that adds so much more lead time to projects, as there's just constant communication frustrations. And a lot of this comes down to labor redundancy, like I was saying earlier, with Indians that the corporation that employ way more Indians than they need. That's a very third world labor model. Like I said, I lived in Mexico for a while. I lived in the Philippines for a while. In the Philippines, in these places, labor is very inexpensive. So corporations, businesses will employ way more people than they actually need. If you go to like a Jollibee or a McDonald's in Manila, you will interact with no fewer than four people. There's right. Someone in line who takes your order, then you go up and pay for it at the cash register, then someone brings out your order, and then there's one dude who just sits around doing nothing, but until you stand up, at which point he instantly grabs your trash and throws it in the trash can. You don't see this in America, because number one, labor was traditionally more expensive here because there's fewer people, but Americans, traditionally, we come up with more efficient ways of doing things through technological progress, you know? So the inventions like, you know, Eli Whitney popularizing the assembly line, the cotton gin, any invention you can think of that makes life easier. When you have this much cheap labor coming in, there's no motivation to innovate. I mean, when was the last time a major scientific innovation came out of Mexico or the Philippines or India for that matter?
Right. No, that's very interesting. And of course, it would be one thing if, you know, the technology that was being applied actually, the benefits went to the customers, but it never does. It seems like, whether, you know, the people are being replaced with Indians or computers, it's like, shouldn't the cost of the service go down if you're paying so much less? Cause that, and that's part of it and a key part of it, but really it's just sort of one aspect of the reason why they're bringing in so many Indians, because they can pay them pennies on the dollar, dirt cheap, and the Indians who have come from, you know, some a dirty, you know, hovel in Mumbai are thrilled with a one-room, you know, apartment in the middle of an American city. American people wouldn't stand for it.
Sharing it with a dozen people and sleeping on mats.
It's still better, right? It's still better than it was in India. And so they can obviously pay them a lot less than an American who's, you know, expects a better quality of life. But it's also about the fact that if they don't do what they're supposed to, you can fire them, then their visa's canceled, and they go home. So, I mean, really, they're importing slave labor.
Yeah, a lot of body shops will do pressure their own, the people they bring in, saying, you have to accept these terrible contracts, or we will cancel your visa, and you're going home. So
right.
They will be, that's a big aspect of why a lot of Indians are replacing Americans in these fields. Indians tend to be more submissive. It's not just due to the visa issue. That's a major issue, a major problem, to be sure. But also, they're very the people they're bringing are very servile to authority. They're less likely to speak out when they're being mistreated. They're less likely to speak out when their superior is doing something illegal. They don't whistleblow. Mm-hmm. The mass entry of Indians basically allows corporations to treat their workers like complete dirt and get away with possibly illegal things that they wouldn't be able to do if they were still employing Americans.
And that's really the case. You know, you can say it's the case with everybody because nobody grows up really with the same level of like independence that Americans do, and this idea that you're responsible and that you have to do the right thing even when nobody else does, like that's not a cultural imperative in a lot of these other places.
Yeah, it's basically Hobbes's war of all against all. It's maybe not that extreme, but we're talking about again countries where where everyone is scamming each other and you have to scam back. Yeah. You know, it exists in Mexico, again, not to the same extent as some of these other places. India, the Philippines. I've lived abroad. I've seen a lot of these places. The culture of, America, the culture of fairness, liberty, like this is not the global norm. The global norm is poverty, misery, and death.
And corruption.
Yes.
And filth. And, I had a video from earlier this week. Maybe the crew can grab it in for next hour. But, you know, just looking at, like, the rivers where they just have open sewage spilling out at 10 million gallons a day into the river that they get their drinking water from. And it's like, guys, there's nothing guaranteeing that the rivers in America don't become just like this. It's only because we choose to preserve our nature that it's preserved. You go to India, there's no nature to speak of. I mean, it is ruined.
I mean, this has been an issue with on the border for a while. Like, yeah. Illegal aliens coming in just trashing the environment. The Sierra Club used to complain about it, but then they got a huge influx of money from a donor who told them, stop talking about anything related to immigration.
Makes sense. All right, we got 5 minutes left. I think we've laid a pretty good argument of why this is a problem and an overwhelming problem that needs to be solved. So let's answer that question. How do we solve this? What do we need to do? Who do we need to advocate for? What do the people need to do to solve this problem? Because this is not covered under illegal immigration. Everybody knows illegal immigration is bad. This is legal immigration. It has to be stopped. And I see it feels like the corporations are the biggest roadblock in America.
Well, we have allies in the government.
Right.
There are people like, you know, I've been in limited contact with people in the government. So if other people in my circle, we've got politicians who are openly on our side, like Chip Roy, I believe, is one. Eric Schmidt, the senator from Missouri, is another. They're trying to shut off the flow of mass immigration. But there are a lot of things that could be done right now. I think Trump has he needs to do more, obviously, but he has made some good moves. The 100,000, you know, fee for H-1Bs. We now have proof that they're deliberately slow walking new visa applications in India, like they just take forever, stuff like that. That's all good, but we need more stuff. I would recommend just, you know, the government needs to, since every financial transaction is tracked. I mean, under Biden, you know, we had to start reporting any income over $600 to the IRS. They had the ability to track the money that's flowing out of here to India. We've got a remittance tax. That's a good thing. They could easily say, just start freezing the bank accounts of anyone who's engaged in all of this. Now, there's a lot of corruption to unwind. Like I said, it's like a Matroska doll with some of these body shops. But they're engaged in open one major pressure point. I've actually had public conversations with Harmeet Dhillon about this on X. One major pressure point is the Indians discriminating against American citizens. That's illegal under the Civil Rights Act. It says right. You can't discriminate under in employment under on the basis of race, ethnicity, or national origin. I'm forgetting the other one, but basically you can't discriminate against someone for being an American citizen. So a lot of them are getting hit by that. Actually, a few already have. Cognizant got in trouble because they were found to be discriminating against American citizens, and the fines need to be increased. I believe Cognizant only got fined about $500 million, which is a drop in the bucket given how much money's coming in. Like, we need to start the left used to use the term corporate death penalty to basically say any corporation caught engaging in this level of malfeasance should just be shut down by the government. That needs to happen. It's not going to be overnight, but for what people can do, again, pressure your representatives, pressure your politicians, support politicians like Ron DeSantis, who have been very good on this, and just don't shut up about it. Because if we don't solve this now, like, it's just going to get worse. We are losing our country before our eyes.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. And it's still fraud. It's just sort of a more subtle fraud. Like with the Somalis, it's obvious, they're getting $10 million for a daycare and there's no children there. It's like, okay, this is fraud. With the Indians, it's a little bit more subtle, right? Because it's like, well, technically, they checked all the boxes, so it's harder to say, like, this is absolute fraud. Then you look into it and you realize, well, they weren't really qualified. Well, they pretended to advertise for the job, but they didn't actually. So, but maybe fraud's not the angle to go on this. I think maybe the civil rights thing is the angle to go. That way you don't have to prove, like, well, these people were doing this because they were getting kicked back. Like, just know, if you chose Indians over Americans and we can prove that, that's a violation.
Oh, yeah. That's a good immediate angle to hit them with. The fraud stuff is going to take a lot longer and a lot more concerted investigation. Doing my part, reporting on it. But, again, if you know about this, if you're not involved in this world, again, pressure politicians, support politicians who are taking the right side on this issue. If you are in the tech industry observing this stuff, reach out to journalists, reach out to me. I'm easy to get a hold of. I report on this stuff extensively. There's tons of other people doing the same thing. A lot of the activism on X right now, like, that's where all this is going on,
and we need people doing that, because we don't know. I mean, I'm not in a big tech company, so I don't know when your whole office gets fired and Indians get brought in and you have to train them for a month and then you're let go. We don't know that even happens. So unless you tell us, unless you reach out and tell us these stories, then we can get it to a wider audience and maybe fix some of this stuff. Matt Forney is an incredible resource for all of this. At Matt Forney on X, mattforney.com, and then the Substack one more time, sir.
The Visa Files, thevisafiles.substack.com.
Thevisafiles.substack.com. Thank you so much for coming on. We really could go on about this for hours, and it's just one aspect of one country's immigration fraud that is destroying our country. There's so much to battle back. Thanks for being with us, Mr.
Thanks for having me on again,
Forney.
Harrison.
Absolutely my pleasure. At Matt Forney on X. I want to remind you folks, by the way, since I haven't plugged this hour, thealexjonesstore.com. We have amazing deals going on. T-shirts are 25% off, hats are 20% off, hoodies are 25% off as well. You're getting up to 45% off some of our best-selling supplements as well. Try Ultramethylene Red for 25% off and become a subscriber. You get 50% off for life, and yours is set aside for you so we never run out. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you, and we'll be back for hour two on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
I reckon a lot of you know I've been on the air for a long time, and we've done quite a few things here, and I've had a lot of different ways that I tried to continue on our mission. So I want to tell you about a begging right here. This is a limited edition knife. We just came out with it a couple days ago, and well, some people call it a sling blade. I call it a Kaiser blade, but you need something to take care of yourself or your family and protect you. I think this will do it. It's an important remake, updated World War II trench knife, double-edged stainless steel, razor sharp. Life is fiery with its beauty. It's got a nice little pin-up girl there right there on it. Mm-hmm. So I reckon this is just about as good as you're going to get is some fried taters and biscuits and mustard. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get one of these before they sell out with the murdered out brass knuckles and skull crusher, then I reckon you better get on over to thealexjonesstore.com while the getting's good. And I appreciate you keeping us on the air in our mission. Mm-hmm. I call it a Kaiser Blade. And it's a limited edition right now. Mm-hmm. But all I know is the globalists shouldn't have done what they did to that boy. What Epstein did. So all I can say is they're going to have the Lord to deal with. But, limited edition, almost sold out. I just know you want this knife. It's selling out quick. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And I thank you for your support.
Mine is the first visit of a Canadian Prime Minister to China in nearly a decade. The world has changed much since that last visit. And I believe the progress that we have made in the partnership sets us up well for the new world order.
The government's coughing up billions in settlements, papering over the festering wounds of dispossession in order to slice Canada up into fragmented provinces under a new world order.
Another possible outcome of all of this land grab activity going on in Canada right now is that if this continues, what's going to happen is Canada's going to break apart in a very short period of time. We're talking a few short years, maybe. And Saskatchewan and Alberta are going to separate. And that will immediately be horrific for our already brutalized economy.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founder.
We're talking about the physical jihad, the physical struggling against the enemies of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Threats of other occurrences such as the rise in the far right.
There will come a day that we will see far more radical extremists and terrorists coming out of Europe because of lack of decision-making, trying to be politically correct. I'm sorry, but that's pure ignorance.
Director General of Asia has warned about a range of threats, be it anti-Semitism, the rise of right-wing extremist groups as well.
Just like Israel, Australia does not have a right to exist!
The government is prepared to take whatever action is necessary. Included in that is the need for tougher gun laws.
There's a need for a new world order, but it has different characteristics in different parts of the world.
Never before has a new world order had to be assembled from so many different perceptions or on so global a scale.
This is the end of civilization as we know it, and a predatory AI globalist robot economy takeover. This is the equivalent of Pearl Harbor when the Japanese struck. This is the first official launch of the end of the rest of our lives. Now, remember, I'm the one that laid this out absolutely specifically, that Bill Gates is the front man for the large robber baron fortunes headed up by IBM that his mother captained. His father ran the World Eugenics Society after it was made illegal in Europe and it went underground. They run the whole thing. And they believe they are exterminating you to save the earth. And I'll just say something. I'm not going to join Bill Gates because it forfeits your soul. But if you go along with this and if you don't spread the word and if you don't stand up for your children and others, you are deserving of what happens to you. Because if you're going to let these people kill you and your family, then you deserve what happens to you.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fights will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
From the front lines of the information war, this is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on for this Tuesday evening broadcast. Hope everybody's doing well. Well, folks, the global government is meeting as we speak on a secluded mountaintop in Switzerland to decide the fate of the world without our input. And again, that really does need to be the intro to the World Economic Forum and Davos as a whole, is the understanding that this is and was always meant to be a true global government. Not one that you get to vote on, not one that's democratic by any means, but it's the managing structure that was designed from the outset to be able to morph into a fully fledged and acknowledged global government. Right now, it's just the global government sort of de facto. It's sort of the de facto global government. Because you understand what's happening right now is that the world leaders, you know, heads of state, heads of corporations that are bigger than states like BlackRock, are getting together in Congress. You know, Congress just means a gathering to plot out the next year, to decide on programs and agendas that they will all then be dispersed to their various nations to then carry out. It is a government for all intents and purposes. It's actually more like the original American government. Remember, it was never really intended that we would have like professional politicians. What it's supposed to be is that the leaders of industry and finance and, you know, the most powerful and important people in your community then go to represent your community for a period of time and then they go home again. That's why Congress is in recess for half the year, because originally you're supposed to not do it full time. It's supposed to be, okay, we all go to D.C., we have a couple weeks of meetings, we decide some stuff, and then we all go back home. That's what the World Economic Forum is. It is a global government. It's unelected, but it's a government. And they put Larry Fink at the head of it because he's in charge of BlackRock, which is sort of the underlying financial shadow government of America. And so we got lots of videos from the World Economic Forum that I'd like to lay out for you. And I'm really glad that I spent an hour yesterday going over the lockstep document and explaining how the world elite see this transformation. See the way that populism is rising around the globe. They see it as an existential threat, as they should, and they're fortressing themselves. The world elite, the world controllers, the powers that be are going into fortress mode as they attempt to weather the populist storm that rages around him. So I don't even know where to start. We got so much out of the World Economic Forum. Trump also giving a speech today with a lot of great points in it, his 1 year anniversary of being inaugurated. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about. But we'll stick with Ursula, I guess. Our good friend Ursula von der Leyen, who, by the way, is like just the noble of the noble, the nobility of the nobility. And that's, again, another thing to realize about the World Economic Forum. It's really not, you know, strictly the best and the brightest. It's not like all these people are geniuses. A lot of them are just, you know, the sort of remaining husks of once great noble families that still retain the name and influence in their countries to get appointed to positions that they don't deserve. Let's go to clip number 12 here. Ursula at the WEF says, this was the year the dollar, or she talks about the year the dollar was delinked from gold. This is actually a very important clip, again, in considering what the global government has in store for us in the future. Digital money seems to be very much on the top of their minds. Let's watch.
And the decision to delink the U.S. dollar from gold. In an instant, the foundations of the Bretton Woods system and the entire global economic order set up after the war effectively collapsed. But it also had two major effects. It inadvertently created the conditions for what would become a truly global order. And it provided a sharp lesson for Europe and on the need to strengthen its economic and political power. It was a warning to reduce our dependencies, in this case, on a foreign currency. The world may be very different today, without any question, but I believe the lesson is very much the same. That geopolitical shocks can and must serve as an opportunity for Europe. And in my view, the seismic change we are going through today is an opportunity, in fact, a necessity to build a new form of Europe.
So do you get what she's saying there? I mean, she's previewing, she's letting everybody know, like, this is what we mean when we say the Great Reset, or, you know, looking into the future, like what the plans are. Like, they understand that the global system itself is a monetary system, is a banking system, and it's that system that has to be replaced if they want the order replaced. They're talking about digital currency. They're talking about introducing some sort of global digital currency that can be tracked and controlled and is totally divorced from anything real at all. Like, do you think these people were mad that the dollar got off of gold? They're not mad. No. They that's fine with them. They're saying this is what marks major global transformations, our currency, like what currency is based on. So that's what they're introducing to everybody. That's what they're preparing everybody for. This is the Sheikh Al Thani, governor of Qatar's central bank, also talking about the rollout of digital currencies at Davos today. Let's watch.
Technologies are transforming, fundamentally transforming the financial sector. A recent report showed that more than 100 countries, more than 100 central banks don't have a fast payment system. And fast payment system is very important for any economy to make the economy efficient. For example, that will also help to reach the goal of cashless-based economy. And this is type of digital product.
A digital product. Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? It's kind of weird how the World Economic Forum and the Davos meeting used to be so into climate change. Remember how they would talk about nothing but climate change for a long time, and now this year it's like not even a concern? The only reason they're even bringing it up is because they're going to justify billions of more immigrants into Western countries off the basis of climate disasters, climate change-based migration. but they don't really care about climate change anymore. Like, it's just so obvious. It's just so obvious that you're paying attention. They just want control, and they do not care about anything else. They were pitching climate change because that was an easy excuse to control people. But then they developed AI and they figured that's a better way to control people, but we need lots of energy to produce it. So climate change is getting in the way of that. Climate change goes out the window, and now they're super dedicated and very, you know, excited about the possibilities of AI saving the world. You would just think that, you know, a global elite conference like this would have like consistent things they're going for year over year. You wouldn't expect it to change 180 degrees in a single year, but that's essentially what's happened here. Let's go back to Ursula. And again, we just played that clip. So let's go to Yuval Noah Harari. So again, this is the sort of spiritual goblin of the World Economic Forum. He's still around, even though Klaus Schwab has left. Let's go to the goblin, Yuval Noah Harari, clip 21 here.
Do you know, as far as putting words in order is concerned, AI already thinks better than many of us. Therefore, anything made of words will be taken over by AI. If laws are made of words, then AI will take over the legal system. If books are just combinations of words, then AI will take over books. If religion is built from words, then AI will take over religion. This is particularly true of religions based on books, like Islam, Christianity, or Judaism. Judaism calls itself the religion of the book, and it grants ultimate authority not to humans, but to words in books. Humans have authority in Judaism, not because of our experiences, but only because we learn words in books. Now, no human can read and remember all the words in all the Jewish books, but AI can easily do that. What happens to a religion of the book when the greatest expert on the holy book is an AI?
What the hell is he talking about? What the hell is he talking about? I mean, obviously he's trying to lay the groundwork, the justification, the initial arguments for an AI god. I think that's pretty obvious. What the hell is he talking about? Things that consist of words are going to be taken over by AI. And so religions are made of words. It's kind of a weird synthesis of like this weird techno babble religion these guys adhere to while still trying to like form it into the mold of Judaism. It's very strange. It's like you would think somebody who's Jewish would be like, you know, the Jews are special because God appeared to like revealed himself to them. It's not because of the book. It's not because of the words in the book. And of course, in Christianity, we believe Jesus is literally the word, right? The logos. It's just, I mean, anybody else feel like we just watched a little mini presentation by Satan? Anybody else feel like that was Satan trying to convince us to eat an apple or something like that? It's just, the whole thing is like this weird pseudo-intellectual occultist play acting they're doing. And they're all a bunch of little weirdos, but obviously putting words in the right order because some algorithmic calculation has determined that's correct does not actually mean you're a thinking being, and doesn't actually mean that you have insight into the spiritual depth of the word of God. But I think to Yuval Noah Harari, the machines are just clever enough that we should treat them like that. If you're clever enough, it's, you might as well treat it like spiritual significance. These absolute weirdos. Should we stick with Yuval Noah Harari? Because this dude is just, I mean, he's saying all this ridiculous stuff. But the number one, the overarching theme of the World Economic Forum is a world order in retreat and a defeated army of billionaires trying to reform their ranks before they're scattered completely and run down by the pursuing enemy. And they keep saying it over and over, and you've got sort of two different, you know, wings of the bird here. You've got the people like Macron or Carney who are saying the New World Order is being destroyed and that's horrible and we need to find a way to replace it. And you have people like Howard Lutnick who's saying, yeah, your New World Order is destroyed and we destroyed it, you suckers. Let's go to clip number 73 here. This is Mark Carney, I believe. No, this is Macron speaking from Davos. Let's watch.
This is as well a shift toward a world without effective collective governance and where multilateralism is weakened by powers that obstruct it or turn away from it and rules are undermined.
Isn't that crazy? Let's pause.
And I can multiply the...
Did I not tell you yesterday verbatim exactly what he just said? I need to run out and grab the packet again. I need the strategic development of technology in the future. I need the lockstep document. Didn't I tell you? This was all pre-planned. All of this is following a script that was written at least 15 years ago. The world order is under threat. I guess we all have to isolate ourselves and fortress ourselves because the multilateral agreements aren't as strong as they once were. Just, if you were watching yesterday, you must have felt like you were watching deja vu if you saw some of these clips this morning. Go back to Emmanuel Macron again, following verbatim, word for word, the instructions handed out by the Rockefeller Foundation in 2010 about Plan C, the retreat and fortress yourselves strategy of the globalists to weather the populist storm currently engulfing the world. Let's continue with Emmanuel Macron.
And rules are undermined. And I can multiply the examples of international bodies weakened or left by the key economies. We are killing the structure where we can fix the situation and the common challenges we have. Without collective governance, cooperation gives way to relentless competition. Competition from the United States of America through trade agreements that undermine our export interests, demand maximum concessions, and openly aim to weaken and subordinate Europe, combined with an endless accumulation of new tariffs that are fundamentally unacceptable, even more so when they are used as leverage against territorial sovereignty.
So, yeah, this has to do with Greenland, I guess, or Venezuela. The whole thing is just, like, what are we even watching? What even is this? If I wanted to destroy Europe, you know what I would do? I'd open its borders. I'd have an extremely powerful, strong, and dysfunctional welfare system. I mean, everything these people have done to Europe is why it's being destroyed at this moment. And, like, actually destroyed. Like, literally, physically destroyed. There's the crown. The French crown that was stolen from the Louvre has now been found, and pictures of it have been released. And the thing is crushed. It's like, you know, looks like it's made of paper and somebody just balled it up. It's been destroyed. Like Notre Dame. Like that church in Amsterdam from New Year's Eve. Like every single European city that you can get a video of, you don't see a single European there. So what the hell are they talking about? Trump's trying to destroy Europe. He's like, they want competition. Yeah, competition's good. Competition's healthy. It's a lack of competition. That means that Europe is currently wallowing in its abject failure to maintain its prosperity, let alone grow it. And that's not an easy thing to do. You just let people alone. They're going to build things. They're going to create things. They're going to have babies. They're going to get together and, you know, make movies and music and film. Like, people are just going to do it. You have to actually intervene to stop that happening. Like, Europe was literally the only like civilized area in the entire world 100 years ago. And the last 100 years, we've gone from everything to nothing. Like I always think about it like one of these games, like Civilization or Rome Total War, you know, Risk, but computer games. And like if you were to go back 100 years, 110 years, right? Early 1900s, 1910s. It's like, you know, if you ever play these games, there's different sort of paths that you can research or like investigate. And so, you know, maybe if you're a warlike people, you'll put a bunch of points into, you know, battle strategy and manufacturing of weapons. And so, you know, you'll have one state that has, you know, 10 ranks on military, but they don't really do agriculture or, you know, science or whatever else. Well, if you go back to like 1910, Europe is all their, you know, power bars are all the way full on technology, all the way full on religion, all the way full on science, all the, like the, everything. Like we just, as if we've been playing the game for 100 years and everybody else just signed on the server and they're all starting basically at zero or one or two. And this is no offense, but like early 1900s, there were still places in Africa that were uncontacted. Still big swaths of the Amazon that had never been photographed or explored or anything. In China, their whole entire society was pretty much exactly the same as it was in the 1600s. You know, Japan had made some deliberate attempt to modernize, but they were still playing catch up very much by the, you know, early 1910s. It was Europe dominating completely. So if you ever play a game like that, like imagine what it would take to lose that game. Imagine you start off with all the gold and all the science and all the academics and all the, you know, religious institutions, all the societal developments that, you know, most people have to grind hours and hours to build up. You start with that and yet you lose. How do you lose that? You lose that by sabotage. You lose that from forces on the inside, not the outside. And so for Emmanuel Macron to talk about American competition wanting to take over Greenland or wanting to kickstart the European economy so that they aren't just endlessly dependent on all our welfare, telling them to invest their own money into NATO. These are the things that will actually save Europe. These are the things that will actually build Europe up. You need competition. You have been degrading continuously for a century and a half at this point. And it's only accelerated over the last two decades where absolutely everything the European leadership has done has seemed perfectly designed to bring about their absolute and irreversible destruction. That's what I'm saying. Why it's so like, it's just like, what am I even watching right now? How is it that these people who spend all of their time and all of their efforts into deliberately destroying Europe, and you can't argue that it's anything but, I mean, is there anything about Europe that has improved in the last 30 years? Anything? Literally anything. Transportation, building, nothing's improved. It's all gotten worse. All of it has gotten worse to the point now that it's actually not even Europe. So for Emmanuel Macron, I mean, this is weird. I mean, it's really bizarro world twilight zone up there on a mountain in Switzerland. But they're all getting it. They're all understanding that their house of cards built out of a bunch of ridiculous lies can only be maintained with a silent, submissive, and basically crushed populace. And when people can speak freely, when they can educate themselves and each other about what's actually going on, the world order that they've built entirely out of deception comes crumbling down. And it's basically like they are trying to ignore that fact. They're pretending to acknowledge it, just like we showed yesterday and we'll show again today. They acknowledge like, well, there's this lack of trust, but they refuse to for a single moment take responsibility for that lack of trust. They are not changing their behavior. They have not suddenly learned to embrace nationalism, like Emmanuel Macron apparently is trying to make people think that he has. They've understood that this is a necessary strategic pivot in order to continue their incredibly destructive and, for the case of Europe, suicidal agenda. We'll turn to the other side. We'll show you a lot more videos from what they're saying at the World Economic Forum. And it's very instructive. You'll see.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for your endless and tireless support over the years. We try to make it easy to be supporters with fabulous products that really enrich and empower your life. A wide selection of Patriot apparel, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. All sorts of really cool knives, collectibles, and the most important, the best supplements you're going to find anywhere. Whatever the highest rated is, whatever has the best studies, whatever has the five-star reviews. I mean, if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, if you don't get our bovine colostrum, that's the very best. If you don't get our Shilajit or our CMOS, you're crazy. If you don't get our turmeric, that's the strongest out there. Anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, so good for you. You're crazy. Big sales going on the site, 40% off on things like the World War II modern version trench knife, limited edition InfoWars black on white trucker hat, free with every order. And they had this thing going since Thursday. I didn't notice it until Sunday, so I had them extend it one day today. But that's it. Every order gets one of these, limited edition, in there. So get yours now, theolliveshowstore.com. But with the deals we got, we need to sell a lot of stuff to fund this operation. So do yourself a favor, Mr. Sit on the Fency. I'm not mad at you. I'm telling you. Get the methylene blue. We have the best. It is so good for you. It is so game-changing, so good for your mind, so good for all your cells, so good for your telomeres. Just get a bottle of ultramethylene blue. Support the broadcast. Finally, because we got even more documents in and more depositions and things, we are about to file our huge, massive civil rights suit with conspiracy against rights, all the proof, the DOJ, the CIA, the Democratic Party, you know, the law firms. I mean, this is a... And by the way, under the rules, we had to show them the suit a few weeks ago. And they went completely ape and threatened us and everything else with, you know, all this stuff they're going to do. Great. Because we got all the evidence up one side and down the other. But I'm taking on the big boys. So know this. The majority of the funding you send us buying products goes to the fight against the tyrants. And we are fully committed to that. They want this show off the air because I know what I'm talking about. That's why I get mad at the shows that are, you know, innuendo and conspiracy theories. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, folks. That's what the media calls me. That's a CIA term. I am an analyst. I'm a futurist. And I know what I'm talking about. And my guests know what they're talking about. You know my rule. Who do I have on all the time? People that are consistently right. I associate with people that got their acts together. And I can tell you, we know what we're doing. This broadcast belongs to you. You built this. It's fighting for your future, my future, all of us collectively. But we can't do it without you. Make the commitment in this ocean of media and information. The bad guys particularly hate this show because we know what we're doing. We're steering people right. But we can't take these people on without you. I need your support. Word of mouth, prayer, and financial support. And I make it damn easy. This is a win-win. All you got to do is go to theolliveshowstore.com.
Now look here, even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements.
Sometimes we have BOGO Sups.
We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I think we have to analyze issues, not just with our brains, but also with our heart. And with an understanding that ultimately we have to serve not ourselves, but society.
Come, liebe Schuster, you tried your best. Yes, you failed to reunite them, but look at it this way. You saved his boys, and that's what counts. Compromise, my friend, is the essence of diplomacy, and diplomacy is the cornerstone of love. Sweet love.
All right, welcome back, folks. It's very funny. It's very funny to see Klaus Schwab try to change his tune and be a hippie. We're not, nobody's falling for this. Nobody's falling for it. But they are, I mean, they are changing their tack in ways that I never expected. I never would have thought that they'd admit the things that they're admitting. And it's obvious what they're admitting. They don't need to admit it for me to know it, but they're basically admitting that the fundamental, foundational underpinnings of their entire world order are totally fraudulent. It's crazy. I'll show you the video here. Let's go to clip number 58. This is Mark Carney, former governor of the Bank of England, who helped spearhead a lot of the COVID-19 lockdowns, current prime minister of Canada, who just yesterday or the day before, we had the video of him talking about teaming up with China to help establish the new world order, as he puts it. And here he is at Davos admitting that the entire concept of an international rules-based order was always a lie. Let's watch.
We knew the story of the international rules-based order was partially false. That the strongest would exempt themselves when convenient. That trade rules were enforced asymmetrically. And we knew that international law applied with varying rigor depending on the identity of the accused or the victim. This fiction was useful. And American hegemony in particular helped provide public goods, open sea lanes, a stable financial system, collective security, and support for frameworks for resolving disputes. So we placed the sign in the window. We participated in the rituals. And we largely avoided calling out the gaps between rhetoric and reality. This bargain no longer works. Let me be direct. We are in the midst of a rupture, not a transition. Over the past two decades, a series of crises in finance, health, energy, and geopolitics have laid bare the risks of extreme global integration. But more recently, great powers have begun using economic integration as weapons. Tariffs as leverage, financial infrastructure as coercion, supply chains as vulnerabilities to be exploited. You cannot live within the lie of mutual benefit through integration when integration becomes the source of your subordination.
I am like 99% sure that speech was written by AI. Have y'all started to notice the little tells? I feel like I can't watch a video now without hearing the, it's not this, it's this. It's like the only thing AI, I mean, I got videos you all know of Harari celebrating the creativity of AI, however his gay little voice sounds. It's not very creative. It kind of does the same thing over and over. And I just heard it there in Mark Carney's speech. But do you understand what he's saying? He's saying it was a pleasant fiction, this rules-based international order. It never existed. It was a little lie that we were all happy to go along with until it no longer served us. Why is it no longer serving us? Because America is no longer choosing to voluntarily subject ourselves to the whims of hostile foreigners. That's what's happening. What he's saying is that, you know, we never had the ability to force the United States to adhere to our demands, to our, you know, play acting, the presumption of them to dictate to the world, you know, what is allowed and what isn't. And America just went along with that for a long time. And now he's saying America's not going along with that anymore. The illusion of international law that America's participation helped to uphold is no longer valid because it's obvious to anybody these international so-called rules-based orders are applied with incredible arbitrariness. It doesn't matter. These things aren't real. The international rules-based order, the laws of international cooperation only apply to the enemies of the New World Order. It was always just the New World Order forcing everybody to play by their rules. That's all. And the New World Order doesn't force itself to play by its own rules. I mean, the most obvious example would be something like Israel, who at this moment is bulldozing the UNRWA, United Nations, food supply charity for the Gazans. They're bulldozing it, and Smotrich is out there on the ground actively helping to destroy it and saying, we're going to kill everybody here. Of course, the ICC is charged and convicted Benjamin Netanyahu and several other Israeli leaders of committing genocide. And like that might be, like that kind of was in a lot of ways the death blow to the international order, is the understanding that at a time when the international rules-based order had a role to play, had an obligation to step in, they have been utterly incapable of even moderating the behavior of Israel, let alone stopping or punishing it. Remember, I said this when we got the Gaza ceasefire in the summer, going, a lot of people aren't happy with this, and part of the reason people aren't satisfied with the conclusion of the war, even though, you know, a lot of people are happy that Gazans aren't being murdered at a rate that they were the 2 years prior, because it felt like an inadequacy. It felt like we've been through this before, and every other time, countries that behaved this way were subjected to the Nuremberg trials. But this time, they're allowed just to sort of say they're stopping, and then they don't even stop. But like, okay, so the whole rules-based order has been shown to be a giant fraud, right? Because if the rules-based order existed for any reason, this would be the reason to literally stop genocide. They can't, they won't, incapable or unwilling, it kind of doesn't matter. The point is, the international rules-based order doesn't exist. Now, if you're Russia, it exists in a very real way, because the moment that you violate a single letter of the law, the so-called international order will come down on you like a ton of bricks. As we've explained over and over and over, they like pitching globalism as the end to war. The whole argument of the League of Nations and then the United Nations and then globalism as a concept, even the trade agreements and the interconnectivity of economies. I mean, it was all predicated on the idea that, well, you aren't going to go to war with somebody that you need. You aren't going to go to war with somebody that supplies your medicine or whatever else. So by interconnecting the world and by establishing international bodies that can presume to have authority over countries, then you can avoid war forever. And in a way, that's true, because you need nation states to go to war, and a nation state going to war with a nation state for a particular period of time until one wins and the other loses and then there's a settlement, that form of war is going away. What we have now, what exists at this point, I'm not predicting, I mean, what is happening at this moment is that you have a New World Order system that is simply at war with everybody outside of the system. And that's the real construct of globalism, and it's the construct that exists in Brave New World in 1984 specifically, because they had this, you know, continual warfare, whether it was East Asia or, you know, whatever else, it didn't matter. The point was they were always at war. Well, we're always at war, and we're always going to be at war against any faction that is not folded completely into the globalist system. Like, I don't think we're going to go to war with China anytime soon, because they're fully in the system, fully controlled. No problems there. But like, look at the Middle East. I mean, Syria has been in a state of war and continues to be in a state of war like they have been for the last 15, 20 years. The war between Israel and Palestine, I mean, it has fits and starts and big conflagrations, and then it simmers for a while, but it's been going on for 50 years and more, 75 years at this point. Slow burn sort of war. That's the actual desired construct of the global order, is all of these countries are in blocks with each other, are you know, controlled and managed by this international group, and any country that doesn't want to go along with it is considered a rogue nation and is slated for total destruction through sanctions and military activity. Any small group of people that want to break away will be considered traitors and domestic terrorists and whatever else, and will be destroyed piecemeal that way. That is the New World Order that they're aiming towards, that they're trying to create, and that they're trying to build. And they're admitting now that because America is going its own way and not adhering to the demands of the international bodies that are incapable of enforcing their dictates, Since we're not willingly and voluntarily subjecting ourselves to the demands of people who hate us, they're freaking out. Because America was supposed to be the engine that built all of this stuff and then was destroyed. But we have broken free. We have rebelled at the last moment and are refusing to go along with it. And that's put them all on the back foot, but they aren't giving up. And they're only really doubling down on their intentions while disguising them. Let's go to clip 30 here. At Davos, WEF co-chair and BlackRock CEO Larry Fink openly acknowledges that the global elite have lost public trust. More than that, let's watch.
We believe that outside the United Nations, this is the largest gathering of global leadership of the post-COVID period of time. For many people, this meeting feels out of step with the moment. We hear all about the elites. And how does that play out in an age of populism? How does an established institution make a difference in an era of deep institutional mistrust? And there's some truth to the critique. I believe in this forum for a long time. I certainly wouldn't be leading this if I didn't believe that we can change and make the world better. But it's also obvious that the world now places far less trust in us to help shape what comes next. If the World Economic Forum is going to be useful going forward, it has to regain that trust.
And, you know, I mean, you know what he means by regain the trust, right? Silence the people that don't trust us. They're not trying to do anything to regain trust. And it's so funny when they're like, yeah, there's some truth to the criticisms. And it's like, what, the criticisms that you're a psychopathic cabal of anti-human demons that are, you know, systematically buying up the world so you can eradicate competition? You're saying there's some truth to that? What part of that is true? Because all of it is terrible. Like, what do you mean there's some truth to that? There's some, you know, good reasons why we don't trust you. So you're kind of admitting to manufacturing the crises that you then take advantage of to enslave us. That's the criticism. That's why we don't trust you, because you take the most important and impactful and like world changing events and you lie about them to us brazenly. And then you silence people who are telling you the truth. So are you going to stop doing that? I mean, the World Economic Forum was on the forefront of the COVID lockdowns, helping to organize and strategize about that. You deliberately stoked fear of a virus to force people to like die alone in their hospital rooms, hugging their families through plastic sheets. And you're like, yeah, you know, there's some truth to that. Yeah, there's some truth to the fact that all of that was completely manufactured and we caused just inconceivable mental human suffering and physical death across the world, totally based on nothing and because we hate you. And yeah, there's some truth to that. But yeah, we know. No, we know. Now, if they wanted to be trusted, they would do things that were trustworthy. They don't care about being trusted as long as they have the power to do something about it. And again, it just put this in context with what Mark Carney was just saying. Like that statement from Mark Carney, I'm blown away that he would ever make that statement. It is such an admission of everything that they're lying about and trying to deceive us about. And admitting basically that like while they had us in their thrall, they didn't do enough. They didn't get us quite locked down enough. And we broke out. It really is amazing because basically what Larry Fink is saying is like, yeah, when we, you know, before the rise of populism, people figured out what we were doing, you know, the whole international rules-based order, like the topic of our trust was immaterial because we just had the ability to impose things on people, whether they believed us or not. Now they don't have that ability. Just like they used to have a lot of, you know, faith in the international rules-based order. But then countries just figured out we don't have to listen to them. and there's nothing that will be done about it. And so now they can't play that charade anymore. They can't, wield that assumed and fabricated power. Like, they're admitting not just that they lost, but that their victory was always hollow and was always an illusion, and we could have broken out at any time. It is really something to behold that Mark Carney go, yeah, the international rules-based order was always kind of a lie. And America figured that out, and now we, Canada and Europe, are being forced to acknowledge that we are not on the same level as America, that our concerns are not as important as American concerns, that we can't, shove America around when America just says no. They have no leverage. They have no ability to make us do anything. Their entire power structure was built on an illusion, and Donald Trump has shattered that illusion. I'm very excited to hear what he says to Davos, honestly. Again, I mean, the whole thing is totally absurd. Let's go to clip 22 here. This is Alex Karp from Palantir. We all know him. Here's him talking about, like, the way he views the world and his political perspective. Man, this whole thing is just weird. It's just bizarre. I mean, maybe this type of stuff makes sense in the context of a bunch of out-of-touch trillionaires on a mountaintop in Switzerland plotting and planning and scheming. But to the rest of us, this is all kind of sounds like nonsense. Now let's watch.
I still view myself as a card-carrying progressive, and I think it's the single most important thing a progressive could do is go around and say, yeah, but the revolution that's coming is going to expose the actual market value of what you're doing, whether we want it or not. Like, it's like, I don't even want to know the market value of some of this stuff. But it is over a relative rapid period of time, so next 3 years, you're just going to get market value, honesty in all sorts of character and communities and micro communities. And the best thing you can do if you are in a community, whether that is a large community like Germany or a large community larger like America, is, and you really care for the people you're representing, is to say, yeah, but we have to kind of look closely at what load we can bear.
Thank you.
Yeah, what? You still a card-carrying progressive? Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out what these world controllers are even saying half the time. What are they even saying? So he's a card-carrying progressive. Of course, progressivism is all about the fundamental transformation of societies away from their traditional construct towards a globalized structure based on equality. And this guy is the guy who is, he's the big American patriot. He's the big European patriot. Progressivism is the word that describes anti-European activity. What is this weirdo talking about? Let's go to 27, another clip from Larry Fink, from Alex Karp talking to Larry Fink. These two deeply unimpressive individuals. Let's watch.
What I think, so I think America and China are kind of very successful, and I spent most of my adult life in Europe and am very pro-European, but I think any honest assessment is that's not gone very well.
Yeah, it's not gone very well. Why is that? He's very pro-European, but of course he also brags about Gotham, the Palantir program, single-handedly stopping the rise of the far right in Europe. And of course the far right in Europe is just that portion of the population that doesn't want to be suicidally replaced by a bunch of foreigners. The far right in Europe are the just native Europeans wanting to continue to exist. So, yeah, no, things have not gone well for Europe. You are a very large part of the reason that is. And everybody else at the World Economic Forum, who, of course, were the engineers behind the immigration system, were the people who created the monetary system that requires infinite growth. And then they're the people that poison the water and the food and the minds of the Europeans so that they aren't having children, so that the birth rate drops, so that the pension system that was set up as a Ponzi scheme necessitating infinite growth required more bodies to be brought in. But they're also the people that set up the welfare system that allows the people that were brought in to not get jobs, live off the state, and make the problem they were supposed to solve infinitely worse. So what are we talking about here exactly, Alex Karp? What have you done for the European people ever other than silence, censor, possibly kill them? Palantir CEO suggests AI bolsters civil liberties, warns Europe falling behind at U.S. and China, says AI trends really do make it hard to imagine why we should have large-scale immigration. We never should have had large-scale immigration. Now that AI is here, I guess it's another reason why we don't need it, but we never needed it. It was always an attack against us, obviously. I think what I'm going to do, because I got a lot more clips from Davos, but like these people really are like unimpressive. They really are. You listen to them talk and you're like, maybe dumb people think what you just said was smart because you used some big words, but I'm a pretty smart guy. I can tell exactly what you're saying. I know the meaning of all the words that you're saying and I can put them together. I get it. And you're not making any sense. You're just gibbering. Just a bunch of gibberish coming out. So I think what I'm going to do is a little compare and contrast. We've watched a couple of clips of the most slimy, dishonest, unimpressive scumbags the world has ever seen try to seem like they know what's going on or have a political view that's in any way sincere. And now that we've shown you the utterly unimpressive and insincere scumbags that are ruling over us, I am just going to play Nick Fuentes for the first 5 minutes of the next hour. We got a 5 minute break at the top of the hour, 5 minute segment at the top of the hour. I think I'm going to let Nick Fuentes and his appearance from Tim Pool's podcast play for 5 minutes, because that really is the thing that's like the big takeaway I always get at Davos. Is you watch these people and you just go, how did these people get anywhere? It's got to be corruption. It's got to be a cabal. It's got to be fraud being committed, because in any real system of meritocracy or even popularity, these people would never make it out of the bottom ranks. It's all fraud. It's all scams. It's all nepotism and who you know and manipulation and the banks putting people who will serve them, not who's best at whatever it is they're being assigned to do. So we'll show Nick Fuentes on the other side, because I think we'd be in a different world if we had like intelligent, thoughtful, sincere people actually running these things rather than this cabal of frauds, miserable perverts. By the way, can we just appreciate that these people are on their back foot? Can we appreciate the fact that we went from 10 years ago, these people just going, here's what we're going to do. Climate change, we're going to starve them all to death. We're going to lock them all in their houses when we release a virus, and these dumbass cattle aren't going to know what hit them. But enough people tuned into InfoWars. Enough people watched the reports and saw the truth for their own eyes and started listening and paying attention to who these people are and what they were doing. Then now they're on the back foot. Now they're trying to justify their existence and trying to scramble to create, you know, little agreements between countries to replace the international world order that has crumbled at our feet. So congratulations, InfoWarriors. This is your victory as much as ours.
People can use this as a teaching moment that, you know, I see a lot of people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it, just pay attention. One is learn history, understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking for who to cast in what roles. because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at what's, how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
Here's the problem with Trump. This is why I didn't vote for him. I knew that this administration has no balls, does not have the will to do it. And you want to know how you knew they have no balls? When Charlie Kirk got shot, they didn't do nothing to Antifa, to the far left, any of these people. And the problem is the administration is pissing them off. It's provoking them, agitating them. The Letitia James stuff, the James Comey stuff, they're poking the left in the eye, but they have no real way to use the federal government. They're not wielding it properly or efficiently. And so what Jim Acosta said, that is a little window into the future. The left is going to take back the House. They're going to subpoena everybody, impeach everybody, prosecute everybody. They're going to come in 28. Maybe they're going to win, and then they're going to bury us. So yeah. The problem with Trump is he's barking up the wrong tree. You either destroy the left or they get in and then they destroy us. It's that simple.
Nick, do you think that these kind of videos are going to have any effect in the fall? Like, because this is something that's broadly unpopular with the American people. And there's so much awful imagery for the left coming out. Do you think that this actually would affect people in midterms? I personally think that it would affect if it was a presidential election. Do you think that it'll get people on the midterms?
Absolutely not. No, because these are left-wing people that are activated. And that's what happens. When the incumbent is in charge, they always lose seats in the midterms. They always lose seats in the House in particular 2 years later. And that's because the left or the opposing party always gets animated and charged up. They get activated by those hot button issues. So these are the same people. These are the shock troops for the legions of the blue wave. They're going to come in 26 in the fall, and we're going to get buried. What is it, like a 3-seat majority? We lose the House, it's curtains. They're going to jam up everything, and then they are going to destroy us. And the difference is the left does not play.
No.
They said, you know, we need F you Democrats. That's all they've ever been. You know, that's what Biden did. That's what this is going to be. And we are all toast when that happens. So for me, I look at the left, and people are saying, I saw that tweet. They said, well, Tim Walz isn't doing anything. Dude, Trump is the president. Isn't this our golden age? Bring in the feds, bring in the troops, shut it down. It's your country. But, you know, our people are not serious. They're playing games. They're giving speeches, doing interviews. They got to send in the troops and crush these people. That's what it's all about. But they're going to wait for them to march it.
These activists have been disrupting law enforcement for a decade plus. And the repercussions are always slap on the wrist, minor charges, rubber bullets. ICE is out enforcing real law. They're not doing crowd control, so they're armed with lethal munitions. And these activists, because they've never felt consequences, literally, quote, why did you have real bullets? Yeah. They think they're playing a game. They think they're playing cops and robbers.
You know, I don't think we should send in the troops. I'll tell you why. I think that the goal of there's Saul Alinsky's rule for radicals. The left, the communist momentum wants the government to establish a fascist crackdown so they can say, see, we told you they're fascist, and then rally a communistic communal revolution against the government. That's my main concern.
Well, Nick, I was going to say, just as far too as like antagonizing the left. I mean, don't you think they would sort of escalate this way anyway, even with or without Trump in office? Because like, I look at the Trump administration, I'm like, look, whatever concerns anyone may have, it's at least buying us time. It's giving us breathing room. And for me, that means it's worthwhile to throw support behind. I mean, like, net negative migration is like huge, I would say, going forward.
I don't feel a lot of breathing room right now. And I think that, you know, there's arguments that like, well, when a Republican's in charge, it buys us time to organize and do things like that. But it's like Elon bought Twitter when Biden was in charge. Censorship got relaxed when Biden was in charge. I feel like the right was never more powerful than a year ago or 2 years ago in 2024. That's when we were at our like apogee. And when Trump gets in power, it's the opposite. Like all the censorship happened in Trump's first term. Charlottesville happened in his first term. BLM happened in his first term. The Vax was created in his first term. And, you know, you're right. The left probably would have gotten charged up anyway. I think though that let's say Trump lost the election in 24. Kamala gets in. I don't think they have as much momentum because the difference is if it's like a continuation of the Democrats, there's still this like right wing anger saying this is an illegitimate government. Kamala never won a primary. If she brings us to war, doubly so. No one believes the election's legit, but Trump wins. And now the right wing is complacent because the right wing says we won. Let's go home. They, you know, you think people are doing something with the breathing room. They're not. The left is breathing. The left is getting excited. And I would have supported Trump if I had confidence that he would use what he gets to actually, like, blow up some of these agents.
That's Nick Fuentes on Tim Pool last night. Really, it was probably one of the best appearances Nick's ever done, I have to say. It was very good. And I agree completely. Couldn't agree more.
Now look here, even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements.
Sometimes we have BOGO Sups.
We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
No spin, no surrender. This is Harrison Smith on The War Room with live streams firing on X and band.video.
Share those links, folks. You know, it's interesting. I was just, you know, watching that segment of Nick Fuentes on Tim Pool. And, of course, I agree with everything they're saying, but I'm going through, you know, the stack of news while it's happening. It's just like confirmation of everything that's being said, right, from the Federalist. Trump's do-nothing Minnesota response is an embarrassment. While Trump overzealously obsesses about acquiring Greenland and other foreign policy ventures, AI, and swapping rhino Senator Bill Cassidy with a rhino House member, a major American state is continuing its rapid descent into third world despotism. By now, most Americans have seen the viral incident of the anti-ICE agitators, which included media hack Don Lemon, storming a church in St. Paul, Minnesota over the weekend in an apparent violation of federal law. While Lemon harassed the church's pastor about why he wasn't okay with demented leftists infringing on his congregation's worship service, the group's other members screeched in the faces of attending families. The anarchists reportedly believed one of the church's pastors was a member of ICE. Members of the Trump administration quickly took to social media to pledge accountability for the incident. Attorney General Pam Bondi claimed that the Justice Department will prosecute federal crimes and ensure the rule of law prevails, while the White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said that President Trump will not tolerate the intimidation and harassment of Christians in their sacred places of worship. But that was a lie. They're being tolerated. It is being tolerated as we speak. Nothing is being done. Except the president has already tolerated this type of leftist-led intimidation and harassment throughout Minnesota for weeks. The primary reason those left-wing anarchists felt comfortable enough storming the church is because Trump and his administration have given them zero reason to feel any, to fear any real accountability for their actions. Left-wing violence and harassment against ICE agents and everyday residents has been occurring in Minneapolis and across the state for weeks. And it goes on and on. And Trump's doing nothing about it. Trump's pathetic and weak response is already an embarrassment. But should he continue this impotent strategy, the anarchy currently unfolding is bound to get much, much worse. Continued abdication of proper law enforcement will further embolden leftist agitators and take more egregious and increasingly violent actions against ICE and non-leftists in Minnesota. And once their allies operating in other cities and states see there's no real consequence from the Trump administration for this apparent lawbreaking, the violence will in all likelihood spread like wildfire across the country, culminating in a quote-unquote summer of love 2.0. And it'll probably be worse. It'll probably be worse than this so-called summer of love. I mean, it's already seemingly worse, and we're sort of just at the tip of it, tip of the iceberg here. And I gotta admit, I'm seeing nothing that hints that Trump, like at this point, it's just one of those things. At this point, the fact that Trump hasn't done anything means he's not going to do anything. If already the conditions haven't been met, if we haven't qualified for the Insurrection Act, like when is that ever going to happen? I don't think it's ever going to happen. And I think it's less likely the closer we get to the midterms. But I don't even think this is their real plan. In fact, we know what their real plan is. And it's again, one of these things where I can't help but look forward and just, you know, I'd love to be wrong, but without any intervening action from the Trump administration, it's pretty obvious what the pattern of behavior is going to be here. Because we saw it already. We saw it in 2020. And like going back, do you think Trump regrets not doing something in 2020 to stop what was going on, if for no other reason than to stop the mail-in ballot scam from going forward? I mean, that alone would have been reason enough in 2020 to impose martial law on certain locations. Going, no, they're using this excuse of a virus, this emergency, to unconstitutionally alter the voting system in a way that makes it impossible to ever tell if we've elected the right person. We can't allow this to happen. But he didn't do any of that. He didn't intervene. He didn't stop the riots. He didn't crack down. He lost the election. They spent the next 4 years trying to throw him in jail or shoot him in the head. And then they had the J6 fabricated event, the false flag, in which they sent thousands of Trump supporters, many of whom totally innocent, most of whom didn't even really break a law, let alone a violent action. But they all were imprisoned, some cases solitary confinement for 2 years, totally torturing the American people. And we've gotten absolutely no relief for any of that. And so, like in a way, it's almost like, I hope I'm wrong. I hope Trump does do something. I hope things go a different way. I don't think I am. And I think kind of like with the QAnon stuff, it's like we almost have to act as if we know the conclusion and that it's the worst conclusion possible. In other words, there's no benefit in acting as if everything's in control and Trump is going to crack down and we're all going to be fine. Because if that doesn't happen, you're totally unprepared. If it does happen, great, but if it doesn't, which it almost certainly won't, then you're just wasting your time and you're going to be flat-footed when the hammer comes down. Or we can just go, look, Trump is not who we thought he was, or he's not doing what he should be doing. He's not going to crack down on these people. They're only going to increase their violence. They're only going to increase their radicalism. They're going to elect radicals. Those radicals are going to get into office, and they do not give a damn about the Constitution. They do not give a damn about morality or America. I mean, genuinely, these people are awful. And we have an example of this with Virginia, some of the new laws they immediately passed. I mean, within 48 hours of getting power in Virginia, they're passing laws to legalize discriminating against white people, to let rapists out without bail. I mean, deliberately making everything less safe, everything worse. And by the way, they made it like illegal to check ID at the polling place. So I doubt Virginia is going to flip back red anytime soon. They basically made their party permanent in Virginia, barring some, you know, major revolutionary event. And they did it, by the way, with the new governor, who is a literal product of the CIA. She is a former CIA agent. So they elect a CIA agent who immediately makes crime legal, makes it legal to discriminate against white people, and makes it illegal to have secure elections. Now imagine that only on the national level, when they get rid of the filibuster, shove everything through, and we've already seen the way that their judge networks are completely corrupt, have absolutely no sense of even pretending that they're acting in good faith and, you know, unbiased in an unbiased way. They're just leftist activists in judge robes. So it's not like the judges are going to stop and intervene and say, wait, this is a violation of their basic human rights. They don't give a damn either. And when you think back to 2020, 2021, and you realize, like, they not only threw people in prison for peacefully protesting in torturous conditions many times, and these people have never, again, nothing's ever been done to them. I mean, the people that did this are still being given high-profile cases in the Trump administration. Ballantyne, this woman, Ballantyne, whatever her name is, was the one who pressured people to try to claim that Trump was encouraging them to go riot in the Capitol. She is still in charge. It's just, like, it really sucks, but, and I'm not like a fear monger. I'm not trying to say that everything is destroyed and be blackpilled, but it's reality. And I'm not so delusional to think that America is immune to this sort of stuff. When you study history, the one thing you learn is that nothing is permanent. What's the line from The Godfather? If there's one thing you learn from history, it's that anybody can be killed. Well, the one other thing you learn from history is that any system can collapse. Any country can devolve into not just things don't work that well, but reign of terror, blood in the streets, running for your life, wondering where your family is. Like, things can get insane very, very quickly, especially if the left tries to get rid of the First Amendment and starts arresting people for speech. Like, that's the point it's going to have to kick off. And it's going to get really messy. And I just hope enough Americans still retain that spark of the rebel, have read enough Solzhenitsyn to know that your love of liberty and willingness to fight and die for it may be the deciding factor in the very near future. Because we know what their plan is. Their plan is to take over unions, take over industries, consolidate their networks for the next 2 years so they can launch the May Day 2028 mass strike across the whole country, where they're going to shut down the economy and make demands that we basically become a communist state. It is literally a second Bolshevik revolution. Not in a way that is hyperbolic and, oh my God, you know, Obamacare, next thing we're going to be in the gulags. No, we are literally following step by step all of the prerequisites that are necessary before a genuine, full-fledged revolution. Like, I really want people to take this seriously. I don't think people are. I'll post stuff about this, and you still get that old played out comment, well, at least we'll get to be friends in the gulag. I'm like, yeah, that's not funny. No, they're really going to throw us in a gulag. I mean, maybe I have a different perspective on this because I'm like friends with people like Stuart Rhodes. But if you're friends with somebody, like, they're going to send armed men to your house to haul you away, throw you in a concrete box, rig a show trial against you, and then you're going to be trapped in a cell for the next 20 years of your life if you're lucky. Most people in these revolutions just get murdered. So it's like, what is plan B for us? So plan A is Trump, and it ain't happening. And if it does happen, great, but for the sake of literally me getting to see the age of 40, like, yeah, I'm going to have to start sort of acting as if I know that by 2028, America will be in a full-fledged state of communist revolt, and that I'm probably going to have a group of people hold up somewhere defending our lives. Like, I'm not even joking. That really is where we're headed. And if you think I'm wrong, I just crack a history book. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. These things are not, like, unavoidable. We could easily defeat all of this. I'm talking about an event that is scheduled for 2 years from now. At any point in the next 2 years, we could intervene. We could arrest the people doing it easily. No problem at all. If I were you, I would bookmark this episode, and I'd come back to this 2 years from now, and you tell me if anybody has done anything. This is what I said on X yesterday. In 2020, Trump did nothing to stop BLM. They rioted, they burned cities, attacked cops, murdered people, destroyed priceless works of art. It created a lawless autonomous zone where a child was murdered and nothing happened to any of them. Then they stopped hiring white men, defunded the police, eliminated bail, elected radicals, rewrote school curriculum, and funneled billions of dollars to their NGO networks. Those few rioters who actually were arrested never got charged, of course, but have now been given gigantic payouts from the cities, New York, Philadelphia, Seattle. They have all paid tens of millions of dollars into the hands of the rioters that burned their cities down in 2020. Then MAGA protested the stolen election, so they arrested thousands of regular people and threw the most prominent activist in prison for 20 years for terrorism, even if they never planned anything and were in a totally different state when the actual riot happened. So my question is, what if that happens again? In other words, what if these protests continue to grow? What if they continue to get more violent? What if judges continue to block federal deployment of troops and Trump adheres to their demands for some inexplicable reason? What if they're able to, you know, weather this storm, and a year from now, Tim Walz and Keith Ellison and Jacob Fry are not only still in their positions, maybe they've gotten some sort of promotion. Maybe Ellison is the governor at that point and Tim Walz is running for president or something. I mean, it's not hard to see how, absent any intervention from Trump, there is absolutely no barrier to this snowball that has already been rolling down the hill of communist revolution getting bigger and bigger and bigger, to the point where 2 years from now, we will be in a state of Russia in 1917. Or we could choose to stop it at any point. Literally any point. But we're not going to, so. So there you go. Again, it's a bummer, but, you know, Trump really wants Greenland, so that's what he's focusing on. I mean, he's got an insurrection, you know, there's this gigantic scam network across the whole country stealing literally tens of billions of dollars with cooperation with the very local authorities that are encouraging their constituency to rise up against ICE and commit violence against them. So, I mean, what are we doing exactly? I mean, I would never be stupid enough to say that, like, Kamala Harris would be better than Trump by any means. But part of me at this point is kind of like, man, what if they succeeded in arresting Trump? Like, what if he was in jail and, like, J.D. Vance had to run instead? Or, like what if we, you know, I don't, obviously Trump is better than the Democrats, but not by much. I mean, I don't know. seems like maybe like somebody else could have done a better job. I don't know. I mean, it's a bummer. Again, we're 1 year into Trump's second administration. And he pardoned the January Sixers. That was good. He closed the border. Excellent work. And the vaccine stuff's been good, RFK. What else, though? What else have we gotten so far? Nothing, as far as I can tell. I mean, the things that we have gotten, I don't want, don't actually matter. Wow, we just stole the president of Venezuela. Whoop-de-freaking-do. Prices are still incredibly high. People are still not hiring white people. Our birth rate is still in the toilet. We're still being flooded by H-1B visas. What have we gotten? What have we benefited from Trump's administration so far? Even the deportations are lower than they were under Barack Obama, except the way that we're going about them is inspiring the outrage and the you know, leftist communist agitation. That's seeding the groundwork for the full-fledged revolution. So, I don't know, maybe it would have been better if he'd just been arrested, thrown in jail for whatever they can come up with. I don't know. But I am, I feel like the betrayal is almost inexplicable. I mean, it is inexplicable because you would think that Trump, if nothing else, would at least want to be seen as a cool guy in the future. He is literally going to be one of the most despised person in the history of the world if things keep going in this direction. He already is to the left, and like the right wing is getting there, honestly. And it's just like, what the hell? So yeah, I mean, it's inexplicable on the face of it. But it's also almost inconceivable. It's like this was kind of our last chance. And the guy said he was going to do all the things we wanted him to do, and now he's just not. And so, you know, in a way, you know, there's like personal betrayal. This is like betrayal on a planetary level. And it's like affecting the entire course of human history for the next 10,000 years or however long we're around. So, you know, it's like kind of a gigantic, unimaginably big deal that nothing is being done about this. And at a certain point, it's on us for falling for it and believing in it and adhering to the learned helplessness that we've been indoctrinated into, where we just keep begging the Trump administration to do something, anything, and they keep not doing anything. And then that's just the cycle that we're in. And we just repeat that over and over. Eventually we got to break out of that cycle, and we just got to go, okay, well, we're doing it ourselves then. Let the chips fall where they may. There's only one thing that's worse than war, and it's being conquered without fighting. And that's what's happening right now. So, I hope you get Greenland, Trump. That'll make everything better, right? Gosh, if only we had Greenland. I'm pretty sure the reason we want Greenland is because we're going to start World War III directly with Russia, and we want to be able to defend ourselves from Greenland if they start launching missiles. So like they really, really want to kick off World War III directly with Russia. We know it's what Europe's doing. We know the American deep state is fully invested in that. But maybe they feel like they can't do it until they get Greenland, because there's got to be something that explains the incredible and random and seemingly arbitrary demands about Greenland that kind of came out of nowhere and are now dominating the American presidency while we face a complete insurrection at home and a communist revolution within 2 years. We'll get back to that on the other side. I honestly don't even know what to do at this point, because stories like this from InfoWars, California Governor Newsom sides with Europe over America urges EU citizens to, quote, stand tall against Trump and calls world leaders pathetic for rolling over to the president of the United States. It's like when we live in a world where Americans will vote for a guy who like genuinely like hates America and is like siding with our opponents. I don't know how to deal with a world where people just let this happen and don't care and are on his side. You're American, dumbass. You're fighting against America. Our system is supposed to not allow that to happen because the people are supposed to care, but they don't.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for your endless and tireless support over the years. We try to make it easy to be supporters with fabulous products that really enrich and empower your life. A wide selection of Patriot apparel, ball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, you name it. All sorts of really cool knives, collectibles, and the most important, the best supplements you're going to find anywhere. Whatever the highest rated is, whatever has the best studies, whatever has the five-star reviews. I mean, if you don't get our ultramethylene blue, if you don't get our bovine colostrum, that's the very best. If you don't get our Shilajit or our CMOS, you're crazy. If you don't get our turmeric, that's the strongest out there. Anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, so good for you. You're crazy. Big sales going on the site, 40% off on things like the World War II modern version trench knife, limited edition InfoWars black on white trucker hat, free with every order. And they had this thing going since Thursday. I didn't notice it until Sunday, so I had them extended one day today. But that's it. Every order gets one of these, limited edition, in there. So get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com. But with the deals we got, we need to sell a lot of stuff to fund this operation. So do yourself a favor, Mr. Sit on the Fency. I'm not mad at you. I'm telling you. Get the methylene blue. We have the best. It is so good for you. It is so game-changing. So good for your mind. So good for all your cells. So good for telomeres. Just get a bottle of ultramethylene blue. Support the broadcast. Finally, because we got even more documents in and more depositions and things, we are about to file our huge, massive civil rights suit with conspiracy against rights, all the proof, the DOJ, the CIA, the Democratic Party, you know, the law firms. I mean, this is a... And by the way, under the rules, we had to show them the suit a few weeks ago. And they went completely ape and threatened us and everything else with, you know, all this stuff they're going to do. Great. Because we got all the evidence up one side and down the other. But I'm taking on the big boys. So know this. The majority of the funding you send us buying products goes to the fight against the tyrants. And we are fully committed to that. They want this show off the air because I know what I'm talking about. That's why I get mad at the shows that are, you know, innuendo and conspiracy theories. I've never been a conspiracy theorist, folks. That's what the media calls me. That's a CIA term. I am an analyst. I'm a futurist. And I know what I'm talking about. And my guests know what they're talking about. You know my rule. Who do I have on all the time? People that are consistently right. I associate with people that got their acts together. And I can tell you, we know what we're doing. This broadcast belongs to you. You built this. It's fighting for your future, my future, all of us collectively. But we can't do it without you. Make the commitment in this ocean of media and information. The bad guys particularly hate this show because we know what we're doing. We're steering people right. But we can't take these people on without you. I need your support. Word of mouth, prayer, and financial support. And I make it damn easy. This is a win-win. All you got to do is go to thealexjonesstore.com. I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and a father and a guy that loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night. To quote Waylon Jennings.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the War Room. I got a lot of videos to show you. I think we'll start with clip one here. The theme tying all these together will be a couple things. One, that you cannot look at the actions of the New World Order, however you want to define that, the actions of the WEF and the UN and the governments of Europe and America. You cannot look at their behavior over the last two decades and not see that they are being deliberately destroyed by their own leadership. That is obvious. There's no other explanation. Because the decisions they're making, it's not like they seemed good at the time and turned out to be wrong. They were always and inevitably going to have the outcomes that they've had, which have been universally negative for the people of Europe and America. That's one thing, is that there's no debate. You can come up with your justifications for it, your explanations for it. But you cannot deny the fact that the European and American leadership has done everything it can for the last two decades to destroy Europe and America. It's not an accident. Okay. The other thing is the unrelenting inability of the liberals to recognize this fact and to put these two things together and to have just even the bare minimum self-preservation instinct to recognize when they're under attack. It really is pathetic. So let's start with clip number one here. The Democrat open border plan to enrich a single party, to establish and entrench single party rule, explained in under 2 minutes. Let's watch.
The Democrat open borders plan to entrench single party rule, explained in under 2 minutes. One, flood the country with untold millions of illegals by land, sea, and air from all over the world. Enough to eclipse the populations of 36 individual U.S. states so far. Two, prioritize the needs of these millions of non-citizens over the needs of the American citizen with free flights, buses, hotels, meals, and phones, ensuring their loyalty to the political party that imported them. Three, keep them in the country at all costs, even when they commit violent crime like murder and rape. Attack the language used to describe the criminals as opposed to the criminals themselves. Slander critics as racist. Four, ensure their privileges are made irrevocable with city and state sanctuary laws that act as population magnets. Codify permanent status and ensure non-cooperation with ICE. Five, count the non-citizens in the census that will determine congressional apportionment in the House of Representatives. As of now, that would equal 13 extra congressional districts, a tremendous amount of electoral power. Six, wage a massive, heavily funded lawfare campaign to change state voting laws that legalize mass mail-in ballots, no signature verification, and no proof of citizenship requirements, making it nearly impossible to prove voter fraud. Seven, lock in the permanent voting majority with campaign promises of lavish benefits and permanent privileges, enshrining generational fealty to the Democrat Party. Eight, win elections. Nine, entrenched single-party rule has been achieved. The best part? Your tax dollars are paying for it.
From at Western Lensman, really an incredible production. And, of course, the really interesting thing about it, you should really think about this, is that you can replace the word America with Europe, and it perfectly applies. Isn't that interesting? Why is it that both America and Europe, despite being entirely different continents with entirely different political setups, with entirely different characters, entirely different population pressures, America's got an ocean separating it from the Middle East, and yet both of these two political bodies, Europe and America, followed exactly the same playbook point by point to flood their countries with foreigners and then entrench the foreigners as a permanent bloc in opposition to the native class. Is that even possible to have happened without collaboration, coordination, orchestration, and conspiracy? Absolutely not. It would be crazy enough for one group to be doing this because it's suicidal on the face of it, because it's obviously so horrifically damaging to the fabric of your entire society and your ability to exist into the future. It is retarded to do any of this. So just one place doing this would be absurd, but it's happening in every single European diaspora country, from Australia to Ireland to America, whether they were colonizers or not, whether they were on which side of World War II. Like, nothing matters except that every single white country in the entire world at the exact same time engaged in this utterly suicidal behavior for no discernible reason. Really interesting how coordinated all of this was and how identical these two programs have been run in America and Europe, just with different sort of language and justifications for why they had to destroy your countries, why you had no choice, why it was very mean to not destroy your country for the sake of millions of hostile foreigners that you created as refugees by bombing their home countries. It really is just, it's probably the greatest crime that's ever been committed. I don't have words to describe what it is we're living through at this moment. It's probably the greatest crime in the history of human beings. Can't think of much that has destroyed more in a more permanent, irreversible way that has caused more strife and pain and suffering. I mean, this has been the murder of a continent, the slow, torturous murder of a continent that is being prevented from fighting back by its own leadership. And this is true for all European countries, but I would point to something like Ireland as maybe the most egregious and horrifying example of this place that was always a subject of imperial power, was always kept under the boot of the UK. They didn't colonize anybody. They weren't out there imposing their will on an unwilling populace ever. They were the ones being imposed upon. They're the ones that were treated like dirt by the rest of Europe, and even when they came over to America. And despite never doing anything to anyone, Ireland has been betrayed and murdered by its own people. And it is hard to fathom that level of destruction being wrought on purpose, by design, and with evil intentions. Let's go to clip number 56 here, because this relates to at least one of the points in that multi-step process to destroy America. The fact about counting the census, counting illegal aliens in the census, and the unwillingness or incapacity for liberals to even comprehend what's being said because, well, maintaining their ideology and their positions depends on them being willfully ignorant, pretending to be stupid because reality is against them. Let's watch.
Lost a House seat because the number of bodies, not citizens, bodies in California went down.
The current ICE raids violate American values and constitutional rights.
The border should be strengthened. I think we can all agree on that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But what do you do with the people that are here that aren't criminals?
Just want to take a bird's eye view of all of this. It has to do with the number of representatives in the House that are allotted to each state. Why did Nancy Pelosi, like, want to give free houses to undocumented immigrants? Why? Because of apportionment. California had the most U-Haul rentals of people leaving California. So in order to counteract that and get their house seat back, they're incentivizing illegal immigration. Please try to take the emotion out of it for one millisecond. I know that it's hard, but it really has to do with the number of bodies, the number of house seats, and power. Because I guarantee you, if apportionment went back to just counting U.S. citizens,
which is
the Democrats wouldn't give two shits about illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
And I want to say one more thing to my family. I was born in New York, like, in 1979, and we went back to Iran and the revolution started, and they wouldn't let Jews leave. My father was threatened with his life. He said he was going on a medical conference, flew to Vienna, left the passports of me, my sister, and my mother in the government's hands so that they knew we weren't escaping. Mm. My mother hired smugglers. We went to the bazaar one day. They put us in the back of a covered truck. We were in fetal position with strangers. Burlap sacks and corn were put on top of us, and we were taken to the border of Pakistan, where we got into a pickup truck. That night in the desert, border police caught us and started shooting at us. We lived in Pakistan for 3 months waiting for visas to reunite with my father. We stayed in Vienna for 3 more months to get legal documents to come to this amazing country legally. It's the right way to do it. We can't not know who is here. They just found a Hamas, somebody who participated in the October 7th attacks. They caught him here in the U.S. Why? Because when Biden administration let all these people in without checking who they are, they let in a Hamas terrorist who participated in October 7th.
No, and tens of thousands of terrorists and tens of thousands of Chinese nationals and tens of thousands of Venezuelan gang members. I mean, what is the justification for this? How do you even like steel man the argument from the other side? I don't know. I mean, it's just another one of these things where there, as far as I can tell, there's no valid argument for why you would count illegal aliens in a census. It just makes absolutely no goddamn sense, and we just never get to debate it. So it just happens. It's just insane. It just is actually insane. Why do illegal immigrants count on the census? Why do they get welfare? Why any of this stuff? It is crazy. The liberals never ask themselves these questions. They never concern themselves with what ulterior motives might possibly be hiding behind the just, I don't know, pablum that they're given, the just boilerplate. We're fighting for all humans, okay? And like, that's enough. They just, as long as you say something like that as a leftist, you can just be like, and anyway, here's my new bill to poison elementary school food. And they're just like, cool, great, fine. I just, you know, I don't know. What else could you do that just has no explanation how it would benefit anybody ever except for bad people? Like, they just do it and then call us racist for opposing it. It's really strange. Residing in Louisiana, accused of ties to Hamas-led October 7th attack. Yeah. But it's like the least of my worries. I'm honestly more concerned about the, you know, Israeli snipers that are walking around us, having just got off a mission where they killed children for fun. That's not the concern. The concern is, why are we counting them in the census? Why is our government dominated by Democrats when the actual people that live in this country don't vote for them? Why is our system built to allow foreigners to not just have a say, but in many cases have a say over and above actual citizens? God only knows how many places in the country where the American people who lived and born, whose family built the place, it would be a Republican, except it's Democrat because a bunch of foreigners come in and cheat in the elections. It really just happens over and over. Let's go to clip number 47 here. This is Greg Gutfeld last night delivering a very powerful monologue about the state of Minnesota. Let's watch.
What's really going on?
Renee Goodenberg.
Yes, because that is actually not the story here. The story is, the story is how you got here. And you won't admit that that is the reason why we're, this isn't about immigration. It isn't about ICE. It isn't about Trump. It is about suicidal empathy that is driven by a rescue fantasy. You have all of these young, middle-aged women going out there because they have some kind of emptiness in their lives, that are going out there in this kind of rescue delusion, helping people they don't know, strangers who are guilty of crimes. How can you defend that? This is not protesters going to a church. That is a mob. The people that invented the phrase safe spaces are breaking it up, frightening kids, right? These are the people that call us fascists and they're hunting people. These are the people that claim to defend women and yet are defending men who abuse women. These are the people that call us homophobic and yet they want to out ICE guys for using, I don't know, gay sex apps. Let's be honest here. Fry's a pussy. He's scared of these people, or else he would stand up for it. Calling it love? There's no such thing as a mob with love. And imagine showing this tape to Don Lemon 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and saying, is this where you saw yourself, Lemon? Crashing a church service, scaring kids, attacking a pastor? Was this your hope and dream to do this? Radicalization is gradual. Black Lives Matter is now bad guys matter. And now you'll defend anything. You're defending rapists. These are the people you're defending.
On what?
And I'm going to go back. No. You had your chance. You brought this up. Where are the police? You know, when you have Hamas supporters and Jewish students, police make the separation. Antifa, Proud Boys, police make the separation. Pro-life and feminists, police make the separation. Somehow, that separation is not even here. Even when the leaders are framing this as protesters versus persecutors, because that's part of this fantasy world that you live in, and yet they decide that they don't need cops to separate it. The ICE agents aren't supposed to deal with that. Mm-hmm. That's what the police do. So you got to ask yourself, why aren't the police there? Because it's a deliberate thing to create this spectacle. And then I'll finish. Mm-hmm. This is not an isolated thing. These rescue fantasies exist because the real power of women, which is in the roles of community, whether it's wife, mother, work, teaching, that stuff has been marginalized by our modern leftist culture that has to be replaced by activism. Your life is meaningless unless you're out there screaming in a cop's face. You have all these sad people out there in this liberation role playing and you're egging it on. You should not be egging this on, Jessica. You know, we had this is a time for brave women. We saw the rise of the internet dad. Whether it was Elon Musk, Jordan Peterson, Mike Rowe, Scott Adams, Joe Rogan, these are people that decided to help young men, find meaning in life, whether it is through service or hard work, constructive activities. Where is the internet mom? The women who step up and show younger women out of this spiritual dead end, because it is a spiritual dead end, and how apt it is that they end up in a church screaming at people. Mm-hmm. You know, this activism doesn't produce anything but suffering because it replaces what is truly meaningful in people's lives. And that's what I meant about the backdrop. It is not about good. It is not about the police officer. It's about how we got here and why we've talked about this over and over again, whether it was George Floyd, whether it was ICE, border guard with the whip. It's all the same. It's a desire to be part of this rescue fantasy because your life's so frickin' empty.
Now I gotta say, you know, typically I don't like when people try to like apply psychiatry or like therapy language to what's motivating people. Cause I think a lot of times people are motivated by what they say they're motivated by. And honestly, I'm usually annoyed because it's usually focused on right-wingers where it's like people are, you know, will get up and just be like, I don't want my child to be a minority in their own homelands. People are like, this is really about let's psychoanalyze exactly why somebody would say this. And it's like maybe because they're just telling the truth. But in this case, I think he's exactly right. I think it's undeniable he's exactly right. I think if you find honest women at these protests, I've seen videos. They'll acknowledge that he's exactly right. And in a way, it's sort of undeniable, right? Ask these people, like, what is it that inspires you to come out here? And it's like, well, I just have this desire to, you know, defend people and I'm going to be a hero. And I mean, it's, you know, works for some of them. I mean, they feel like they're heroes. It's just that there's no risk to it. And what they're doing isn't actually heroic. Like we've got this one. This video went viral of a woman, liberal white woman in Minneapolis, crying hysterically because ICE exists. And she's just like bawling and just like, wah! And just like crying so hard. ICE was there because they're arresting two men, Kong Meng Vang, wanted for sexual assault, gang activity, and assault, and Lu Mao, wanted for sexual assault of a minor, rape, kidnapping, and domestic violence. Like you get this is incompatible, right? This doesn't make any sense. In reality, what's happening here is completely nonsensical. In the imaginary world of make-believe that the leftists inhabit, this woman is heartbroken by the inhumanity of ICE just hauling people away from their family. It doesn't exist, right? She's crying. She thinks Bigfoot got shot. It doesn't exist, lady. So in reality, this woman is bawling, weeping, shuddering in emotion because two fat Asian pedophiles are getting arrested. What? Like, imagine like opening up a newspaper and being like, huh, some gang member named Vang and some child kidnapping rapist named Mao just got arrested. And the girl's like, hey, what? What do you mean they got arrested? It's like, I don't know. These that foreign criminal rapist got arrested by the cops. They're like, but why? You mean they're going to go to jail? Like, yeah, they're going to go to jail. They're rapists, you weirdo. What are you crying about? Like, you understand how little sense this makes in reality? The woman is bawling. She's crying and weeping over the fact that pedophiles are being arrested. In reality, now in her mind, something entirely different is happening. I don't know. In reality, ICE is there to arrest Chinese pedophile gang member rapists, and this is breaking her heart. Okay, so she shouldn't be allowed to vote. I guess what I'm saying in a word is, why do we allow her to vote? Let's go to clip number 19 here. Again, as we just talk about the obvious destruction, the deliberate destruction of America and Europe that's being wrought, and the Ukraine war is a very large portion of this. But everything that our politicians and governments and mainstream media is engaged in all contributes to this phenomenon. Let's watch clip 19.
The war between Russia and Ukraine was a war between the U.S. financial industrial complex and Europe. And Europe is already subordinate to the same financial industrial complex. It was an asset stripping operation. It was to asset strip the manufacturing base of Germany. It was to make unaffordable energy to Germany. It was to weaken the economy. They simultaneously used ESG and renewable energy and climate change to switch off all their nuclear energy. They blew up Nord Stream pipeline so that they couldn't get the energy that Europe needs and Germany needs to maintain its manufacturing base. And then they bankrupted it with QE debt and COVID and investing in brand new renewable energy that where that investment was never going to succeed because only China could do it. And so once you break Germany and the manufacturing base, you break Europe. You do Brexit, you separate out UK, you strategically destroy every aspect of Europe, and then you use covert operations. So in 2014, they did a regime change in Ukraine. They ended up with Zelensky. Zelensky works for the military industrial complex.
He's literally an actor.
Yep. You get you install Starmer, you install Mertz, you install Macron, you install, you know, you give different flavors. You do the right wing ones, you do the left wing ones. And their job is to create a narrative around how we're defending democracy and that while everyone's addicted to drugs, homeless, going through a cost of living crisis, choosing between eating and heating, you're still okay sending $3 billion over to Ukraine that gets spent back up into the US stock market to prop up the dollar, or you can spend it into the German military industrial complex, but all of it is being spent into the military industrial complex. There ain't nobody trying to stop a war right now. Russia will own Ukraine and the financial industrial complex will own the rest of it. And that was pre-planned.
If you think all of this is an accident, if you think all this is a coincidence, if you think all of these policies that have directly and irrefutably contributed to the total collapse of Europe are all just accidents, then you're a fool. I'm sorry to let you know. But I doubt you believe that because you're watching us on InfoWars, so you know better. We have to go educate the fools. That's about going to be it for us. Remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. We have some amazing deals going on right there, right now on thealexjonesstore.com. T-shirts are 25% off, hats are 20% off, hoodies are 25% off. So warm up now with a stylish hoodie from thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. If you want to let them know who sent you. And we're back tomorrow for four more.
If you ask Gronk, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionist on the Olympic teams. They will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexJonesStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rating. 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue. Possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.